For coming this evening during closed session, we discussed a personnel review and possible action. My next question to the board is, do we have consensus on the order of business this evening?
Yes.
All right, thank you. And then we will move on to approval of the minutes from the September 3rd, 2019 regular board meeting.
I move approval.
Second.
Right, we have a motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. All right. Student representatives to the board. Hi, Greg. All right. We have Morro Bay. We have two. We were double teaming this evening. And we have San Luis High. Who would like to begin this evening?
Hello, everyone. Hope everyone's having a good week so far. At SLO High, we've been putting on a lunchtime activity every single day this week and last week, where kids who stay on campus can just hang out, meet new people, and have fun. This Friday, we have something called open mic at lunch, where artists can perform at lunchtime. We're selling food and treats, and it's going to be a good time there. And then we're really doing a lot of renovations to our social media pages. Our athletics page, we've added new post-game interviews and other things to make it more dynamic and not so bland. But that's pretty much what we've got on going at SLO High School.
Thank you. And before you begin, I immediately forgot a request by Mr. Mayfield. ¿Hay alguien aquí quien quiere traducción? Tenemos. Where is our translator? Okay. Levanta su mano, por favor, si quiere traducción durante este tiempo. Okay. Gracias. Okay. And Morro Bay High School.
Hi. So we've also been doing a lot of stuff at lunchtime this week and also for the past couple of weeks. But today in particular was a really big deal for us because it was Club Rush. And if you're not familiar with the idea of Club Rush, it's where every single club gets to set up a booth in the quad. And then they get to take sign-ups from any students that are interested in that club. And we had all kinds of participation. And we have lots of like various types of clubs. Like we have an environmental club. We have Students for Social Justice, Kindness Club, we have gardening club, and then you know your typical clubs like Interact and stuff like that, that we have like a tradition that keeps on going. And it was super successful. It seems like everybody really liked it. You know, the clubs give out free food, so that really attracts a lot of people. And we've been told about the focus groups that the district is supposed to focus on, and we tried to make Club Rush really closely aligned with Focus Area 3, which we know is the social well-being. So the club outreach kind of helps students be able to make more friends, it helps them get more involved with the school, and that can make your high school experience a lot better, and we know that. And then Jenna is going to tell you about our upcoming events.
I'm Jenna, as Riley said. So Club Rush was today, that was our most upcoming event. This Friday we have our fall sports pep rally to recognize all the fall sports and the games that they've won and just recognize the students for all their hard work so far. Next Wednesday is our annual Powder Puff game, and the seniors are going to win. And then our most popular lunchtime tournament, our dodgeball tournament, is coming up October 1st through 4th, and we have a lot of signups already. We are giving the winner free burritos, which makes students want to participate because food is always the way to go. And then we also have our Red Ribbon Week coming up, which is just the Drug and Alcohol Awareness Week to make sure kids stay away from that. And so that's what we're doing at Morro Bay.
Well, thank you, Riley, Gregory, and Jenna. We appreciate you being here. We understand if you have commitments to things like schoolwork and other activities this evening. So if you wish to stay, you are most welcome. If you need to leave, you are welcome to do that as well. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
And next, we are moving on to our Del Mar program highlights. Mr. Mayfield.
Good evening. Since we're here at Del Mar Elementary School, we're going to have the Dolphins share some of the exciting events that are happening here at Del Mar, and I'll introduce Janet Gould, the principal.
Hello, good evening. Janet Gould, principal of Del Mar, and I'm excited to have four of our students and our student council advisor here this evening to talk to you about Del Mar Student Council. So come on up.
Hi, my name is Emily Riddles, and I'm in fifth grade. I'm going to talk to you about the Del Mar Student Council. Each fall, we have a campaign week where fourth and fifth grade students can run to be a student council officer. We put up posters around the school, and we have an assembly on Friday where all of the candidates tell why they want to be an officer. One great thing about running for student council is that even if you don't win, you still get to be a representative on student council. Last year, we had 30 students run for a student council officer position. I had the office of treasurer last year. Ms. Potter is our student council advisor, and about 50 students participate in student council. In student council, we plan a monthly spirit day. Some of the spirit days we did last year are pajama day, crazy hair day, art day, sport day, and fancy day. We do this as a fun way to bring us all together, and we try to choose days that everyone can participate in. We also talk about ways to make our school better and meet with Ms. Gold to discuss the ideas we have. We have meetings each month during our lunchtime, and then the class students council representative go back to their classroom and give a report of all the things that happen at the meeting.
Hi, my name is Ava Caton, and I'm in fifth grade. Last year, I had the office of student council secretary. Each year, we do a community service fundraiser. Last year, we did Pennies for Patients, which helps raise money for children with cancer. And we raised over $1,500. During the fundraiser, the student council went around and collected coins from the classes. We also made income announcements to the classmates, encouraging them to bring their spare change. Last year, we started something new. As part of the student council, we started to attend the Morro Bay City Council meetings. And during public input, we talk about the great things that are happening at our school. We decided that we would do the same thing for you tonight.
Hello, school board members. My name is Demi Macias, and I'm a third grade student at Del Mar. Last year, I was one of the students who spoke at the Morro Bay City Council, and I am happy to talk with you tonight. There are many great things that are happening at Del Mar this year, and I am going to tell you a few of them. This week, we started our homework club. Students meet after school from 2:30 to 3:30 and work together on their homework, and adults are there to help them too. We have a first through second homework club, a third through fourth homework club, and a fifth grade homework club. We have about 50 students who participate in homework club. Last week, our chess club started. This year, we have 2 days of chess. One day is for first through second grade students, and the other is third through fifth grade students. Between the two classes, we have 40... Between the two classes, we have 40 students who are signed up to play in our chess club. Our chess club has fun playing in our tournaments in our county. Del Mar will be celebrating Start with Hello Week, September 23rd through September 27th. It's a week to focus on being more inclusive and connected to our peers. We will all have different activities each day. For example, Tuesday is Say Hey Day. We will all wear name tags that day on day and be encouraged to say hello to someone new, using their name tags when we do. On Thursday, we will have No One Eats Alone mixed up at lunch and by students that share our birth month.
Hello, my name is Rocio Barajas. I am in fourth grade at Del Mar, and I also spoke at City Council last year. This year, we again have the Got Your Back program at Del Mar, which sends home backpacks with food for students on Friday. We have 60 students signed up for Got Your Back. We are starting a teeth cleaning at school program this year, and we have about 100 students whose parents have signed them up to get their teeth cleaned at school. Our fourth and fifth grade STEAM classes are starting soon. This year, our classes are outdoor science, art history, Lego robotics, coding, chess, and script writing movie making. And finally, our school is holding our PTA Fall Carnival on Sunday, October 27th, and we invite you to come and enjoy the fun. There will be free games for kids and also a silent auction for adults. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share some of the things that make Del Mar an amazing, distinguished school.
And thank you for having me. I'm Sandy Potter, fifth grade teacher here at Del Mar and student council advisor. And I don't know about you, but I'm so very impressed by these kids. And I'm really, really very proud of them. I'm proud of being at this school and our staff. We all work together to do what's best for each and every child. Ms. Gould asked me to just address a couple things that we're doing here at our school-wide and led by student council to address inclusion and equity. And again, I'm saying, I'm repeating myself, but I'm very proud of all the things that we've been doing. Student council, we've started to run it a little bit differently. We have elections coming up at the end of this month for this coming year. And in the past, there's been a great variety of posters that come from home and they're displayed. And so last year, just kind of put the idea out there in an email to the staff, hey, do you have something in your cupboard, that any art supplies or anything that you don't care about, you don't use anymore, and just bring them down to my room. And so we passed them out, and the difference in the posters was just amazing. All the posters looked awesome. Everybody felt good about what they were putting up, and it really made a big difference, and it was such a small little thing for us to just kind of take a few things out of our cupboard and make sure that everybody has them. This year, we've been fortunate enough to get a lot of donations from Dollar Tree and some other anonymous donors, and some people have donated school supplies. We have so many supplies that we are now able to make little campaign poster kits, and so we're assembling those with markers and glue sticks, and we have some money for some lettering and things like that that will really spruce up some posters. So I'm really anticipating, again, for everybody to be at equal footing when we put our posters up around the school, and it's really exciting. It's a visible difference. And then, again, I feel like we're changing. Our student council is kind of leading the way as far as changing little things that one at a time with mindset of the students in finding activities for spirit days that don't require having things. It's much more centered on doing things together here at lunch and at recess. And again, we've kind of thought outside of the box when we've come up with our spirit days, and it's been really exciting. We have had Art Day. In fact, I think that was Rocio's idea. And we had Art Day, and it was a really big hit. And again, we just asked some staff members, do you have any Play-Doh? Do you have any old markers? Do you have any whatever? And they said, oh, sure. And we literally just put up stations for them to create things and do things that lunch, and it was a big hit. Kids loved it, and it doesn't require any money, and it puts us all on equal footing, and our spirit days, I think, keep growing and growing, and it's more inclusive in bringing us all together. So we've played games together. We even had a fashion show out on our stage at the end of the year. Miss Gould did participate. And so anyway, we've just had a lot of fun together, and we're finding ways and changing our thinking as far as what can we do where we all can participate. We don't have to have football jerseys or expensive equipment or something like that at home to participate. So that's my say for tonight. And again, I can't say enough good things about our school. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Frame? Oh, I just wanted to thank Ms. Potter, and I don't know your secret, Mrs. Potter. I used to work with Mrs. Potter, and she looks younger and younger, so I don't know what your secret is. The second thing is, I know as being a teacher in the classroom, it takes an enormous amount of effort not to do what you do, not only to do what you do in the classroom, but to do outside of this classroom. So I'd like to commend you for this very rewarding, but it's, you know, you're putting a lot of time into that. So thank you very much for that. And to the students, I would like to congratulate you for your courage in running and having these ideas and sharing them with your peers. I mean, that's a phenomenal thing, and it's kind of a testament to the school and to you, Ms. Potter and Ms. Gold. So thank you very much.
Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, I get to come to Del Mar pretty frequently, and you have a very impressive school. From the things that you do for mindfulness and piloting the mindfulness program, which clearly helps all the students here, and I think it helps the classroom management. And I'm so impressed by that. But even more so, Sandy, and hearing from you and hearing from the students about the things that you're doing to really put your equity money where your mouth is. One of the things that we as school board members are trying to do is look for those opportunities for equity when we go visit schools. And it's clear when you say things like, we're going from having things to doing things, that you're looking as a school at what we can do to make sure that every kid has an opportunity. And I just really want to congratulate you guys for that.
So thank you so much for coming. You guys are pros. I mean, city council. Ms. Addis must have been very impressed as well. So I thank you so much for taking the time to come see us tonight. We're very appreciative and grateful for seeing you. So thank you. Our next agenda item is correspondence, and at the time the agenda was published, the board had received correspondence from Rachel McElhaney Revele, and I know several of us have received other emails, correspondence as well. So thank you. We appreciate it. Next, we're going on to public comment. This is a time when people wish to address the board about an item not on the agenda, or if it is on the agenda but you don't want to stay until we reach that item, you may address us now. Each speaker is limited to 3 minutes. Ms. Dawson will keep track of the timer. We do not allow trading time, or if you don't use all your time, giving it to somebody else. You have your 3 minutes. You get to speak once on each particular topic. We do have, if someone is here and needing the services of the translator, that person will have 6 minutes to address the board, because we don't have simultaneous translation. So having said that, is there anyone who wishes to address the board at this time? If you haven't filled out a yellow sheet, please, okay, you already have it. And when you come up, please state your name and where you have a student. So do you know who this?
I don't.
Okay, would you state your name, please, and then we'll pull your yellow sheet.
My name is Maeve Holden. I'm a mother of a second grader here at Del Mar. And I just wanted to go over a concern I had that happened. It came forward on Friday. I'm kind of ground zero where it happened, because it was my son who told me first. During a free time on Friday afternoon at school, some students were on a kid-appropriate try-not-to-laugh site that they were allowed on their Chromebook. One of the students clicked on a pop-up internet vine that led to a video showing two girls in a pool taking off their tops. Being seven-year-olds, they showed their friends. My son was one of those students, and he told me that night over pizza. Not because he felt like it was something he had to report to an adult, but because he thought it was funny. None of the other students talked to their parents about it. My concern isn't the content. You can see that at Tognazzini's downtown. My concern is the access and the fact that the internet works by thumbnails and by vines. That YouTube, that is how it goes. That in order to flag a video, you have to know how to make to flag it and to make it inappropriate content and click that through. They're 7 and 8 year olds. They're not going to do that. Also, my concern is in the safety surrounding the computer uses in these lower grades. I did not know that they had access to the internet. I thought the Chromebooks were just being used for ST math and being used as a reward in free time. In my household, technology is neutral, meaning I don't use it as a punishment or as a reward. So by using it as a reward, my son gets a huge, of course he's going to go to that every single time. He also isn't allowed on YouTube at my home. I'm also not sure of the educational value of YouTube at these lower grade levels or other internet sites like them, but these sites do have a disproportionate potential for harm of images. Once they're seen, they can't be unseen. There's a lot of emphasis on safety in the school, crossing guards, you close campuses, security. But if you allow someone into this internet realm, there should be as much attention to safety in that realm as well. Given that they are 7, I'm not sure that they understand the parameters of what they should and should not be using. Unfortunately, I was not contacted before there was a response from the school. The response, whatever it may have been, left my second grader feeling like he was being disciplined for something that he had no control over. He felt like he was in trouble. In fact, he cried and was upset with me tonight when he thought I was going to come. He thought he was going to be disciplined tomorrow. For me coming to speak out on his behalf. I don't want to get in more trouble, he said. They'll discipline me.
Your time is up. Thank you for speaking
some silence.
With us. Thank you. Okay. Anyone else at this time?
Yes. Well, do you want me to go to the?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not
okay, then.
To people speaking.
Next, I have, I think this says Tim Baxter.
Boker,
I beg your pardon.
Sorry. Yes.
Sorry. So, first and foremost, good evening. Thank you for having me tonight.
These are all for now.
You know, my son is in class with Maeve. And so, piggybacking on what she said without beating a dead horse is just that they're 7 years old. I mean, if anyone is a parent, you can relate, like, you know, you're joking around with your adult friends. Oh, gosh, I hope I never have to have that conversation with my kid. Or, oh, it's going to be weird when I have to have that conversation with your kid. And once it's already seen, it can't be unsung or unseen. So my concern is just, I'm a huge proponent of technology. In my house, it is different. We do allow kids YouTube because there is YouTube for kids. The way that Google works is you build algorithms, and certain algorithms develop your video patterns and trends. So we've set up the algorithms and we only allow a specific amount of time. I wasn't aware, just as Maeve wasn't aware, that you were allowed free time. And I am a huge proponent of what not only you guys as the board members do for this school, but what Ms. School does. I'm glad you guys have a commitment to excellence. That's huge. I grew up in the desert. For my kid to grow up next to the beach, it's huge. So what I'd like to just propose is that, you know, they're 7, they're 8, first and second graders. If we're not teaching sex education until fourth grade, I don't mind that he does ST math. I think that's great. It's a restricted application. You go specifically to that application. Or if there's reading comprehension, chess, something that's built to the curriculum of what these extracurricular activities that these children had mentioned, I think that's all great. If it's about learning, if it's about enhancing your educational experience, I think that's great. But what's to stop them from accidentally clicking on an execution video? Or, Daddy, I saw a right-wing video or a left-wing. What's this? What's that? They're so innocent for so little in life. I'd like to preserve as much innocence of that as possible until the appropriate time. If fourth grade is the appropriate time where we take off, you know, the lid of that and say, okay, well, you have the same access as a seventh grader, even though you're in second grade, you know, I think that's important, just so that we can limit the amount of exposure that these kids could potentially be to, because some kids in his class aren't even allowed to play video games, aren't even allowed to have YouTube or internet. So the fact that they're allowed to do that, it's conflicting to those parents that may not even be here. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your commitment to excellence.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, right. I'm taking these requests in the order received. So the next speaker is Cindy Goodyear.
Good evening. My name is Cindy Goodyear. My grandchildren attend Baywood, Los Osos Middle School Teach, and my own children attended Baywood Teach and Morro Bay High School. First of all, I have no problem with immersion education. I do have a problem, however, with losing my neighborhood school. Second, it seems that most speakers who have talked in favor of immersion schools seem to think this is the best student possible. My children did not go to immersion school. My oldest got early admission to Sonoma State after being on the honor roll as an AP student at Morro Bay. He did not go to immersion school. My second completed her degree at Cal Poly early, was in the top five of her class as an AP student at Morro Bay, and did not go to immersion school. She is, however, fluent in a foreign language, and it has made it possible for her to be employed as bilingual in several businesses. She speaks fluent French, no longer offered at Morro Bay. My third child is a successful business owner and tradesman and employee of a large corporation and did not go to immersion school. I happen to know of a family in Baywood where the children were homeschooled and gained early admission to MIT and Ivy League schools, no immersion school. So not all successful students from San Luis Coastal come from Pacheco, and I resent that insinuation. For those of you who don't know, there is a large group of Baywood parents and Monarch parents that are against Baywood becoming an immersion school. As I pick up my grandson in one of the three kindergartens at Baywood, people talk of being so lucky to be in the last kindergarten at Baywood that will not be in Spanish. There's been three large letter-writing campaigns, not seen in any paper. There's a group at Monarch against this action, as they know their school is about to be impacted by a larger population. There will be another large group of families that will find out Baywood is no longer a neighborhood school but an immersion school when they bring their children to sign up for kindergarten. When I was lucky enough to take my grandchildren to Baywood school at kindergarten, it was a very unusual feeling, but I was happy to be at such a nice place. I'm thinking about my grandson mostly at this time as he is in kindergarten at Baywood. When he started preschool last year, he had been through private speech therapy and only spoke the week before he started preschool. I can only wonder about him being met at kindergarten in Spanish with a bigger alphabet to learn, more words in a foreign language, when he was already struggling with English. We would have had to change schools out of our neighborhood. I have read studies that contradict some that have been quoted. An immersion school can be quite fractionated and isolating for both sides of the equation, actually segregated. Field trips happen at two different levels, and the parents often do not intermingle. I wouldn't imagine there would be speech therapy for those who need it, and would it be taught in Spanish? Students actually test below state levels until third or fourth grade, struggling to learn in two languages. I've heard of students being taught more at home because they could not grasp a math concept in Spanish, but when explained in English, they understood. They were not given this opportunity at school. My neighbor has a son going to TK at Monarch, and at this time...
Thank you. Your time is up. Thank you for speaking.
Okay, next we have Marika Van Buren, and on this request, she's speaking to the Coastal Bilingual Program.
Hello, board members. Today I'm speaking on behalf of Mayor Heidi Harmon. I understand that she has written a correspondence to you guys, and she would like me to read it aloud during the meeting today. She writes, "Dear board members, I am writing to express my support for the proposed dual immersion program at Baywood School. I have heard so much support from the community and a wide array of educators over the last couple of months, and I think this is a critically important step in assuring equity access and holistic education opportunities on the coast. My children attended Pacheco, and over the many years of living and leading in San Luis Obispo, I have been a witness to the incredible success of students emerging from that program with confidence not only in their dual language, but the social-emotional skills they gained. The only challenge to Pacheco was that everyone wanted to go there, and I hear all the time from our community that this challenge remains. Coastal families lucky enough to get in had to make the drive every day to benefit from this great program. When we look at supporting our next generation to thrive and succeed, it is incumbent upon us to also look at how we can steward a planet that supports this generation to live, grow, and prosper. By providing opportunities for students to stay on the coast for dual immersion opportunities and avoid commuting, we are taking important steps to mitigate GHG emissions and combat the climate crisis. Supporting students to stay in place builds stronger, more resilient communities. For the past several years, I have served on Dr. Prater's Common Ground Task Force, a group committed to assuring all children are safe, heard, seen, and included. In this multicultural state, in an ever-diversifying nation, it is imperative that we provide this meaningful, everyday way for children from all backgrounds to connect, learn, and grow together. I know there are still details to work out, and like any great thing, this will continue to strengthen and grow with time. There are great leaders in place to lead this forward, and I trust that they will lead with thoughtfulness, inclusion, and creativity to meet the needs and development of our youth. I hope you will support the future of our community and vote yes on this important next step. Thank you for your time. Heidi Harmon, Mayor of San Luis Obispo.
Thank you. Oh, but please don't leave, because I have another request to speak, and this has to do with,
yes.
Did you want to wait until item 10.4 or speak now to letter to the City Council?
I can wait until the item comes up.
Okay. Then Melissa Donay.
I was going to speak during that.
Okay.
All right, anyone else who would like to address the board at this time? Thank you.
Okay, so we have Mike Wilson, followed by Su-Yin Lun?
Luna.
Lewin.
Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure to be able to address you and tell you a little bit about my experience with bilingualism. Bilingualism for me wasn't something that I chose, of course. My parents maybe weren't very aware of what was happening, but my mom spoke to me in Spanish. My dad spoke to me in English. I learned both languages transparently without being aware of it. And as my life went by, I often thought of it, I took it for granted, and I didn't think very much of it. But as time went by, I discovered that it opened singular doors and opportunities and advantages for me that weren't immediately clear and that I've learned about as time has gone by. It turns out that one of the salient characteristics of the human mind and brain is that we have this predisposition for learning language, in particular, before we become teenagers. And I think that there is no question that all of us want to give our children the best opportunity possible to have a leg up in life and to have an advantage, to be able to make themselves into upstanding citizens that belong to their community, that contribute to it, and that are successful in whichever way they define that. Being able to open doors in different languages isn't the equivalent of like learning a different subject matter. It's not like taking home ec or history or geography. It's actually another operating system that runs inside our minds that enables us to imagine and envision different possibilities that are sometimes not visible to monolingual people because of the constraints that the cultural window imposes on us through language. Having access to these two things is indeed challenging, and I'm aware of the fact that children often start speaking at a little bit later age when they're in bilingual homes. However, this is compensated for the fact that their vocabulary by the time they're 2 years old is so much greater in both language than children that are monolingual in comparative situations. To me, the fact that Vocabulary size correlates really well with success in learning later on in our careers should be sufficient for us to say, if we have an advantage that we can give our children, why would we not give it to them? Bilingual education has made a world of difference for me. After all my studies and training as a scientist and experience in education and politics and many other areas, well, now I am making my living as an interpreter of the court. I'm able to serve people who need to have a little bit more balance in the impartition of justice. It helps me to make justice work just a little bit better than it would otherwise, which gives me great satisfaction. And, you know, all these things that I learned throughout my life have not been wasted. But in fact, this gift that I got from my parents when I was very young is what enables me to make a living for my family now. I have four beautiful children who are all bilingual now, and I can't say any more than I highly recommend it for anyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm just going to mispronounce this name again. Mr. Wilson, your wife.
Ms. Lewis.
Okay, so then we'll go back to her. I don't know how to pronounce that.
I think he said it's Lewin.
Lewin?
Okay. Looks like we have another one coming.
Okay. Laura McCardin, please.
Good evening. My name's Laura McCarley. And I just felt like I should say something. I'm a mom of four kids in the district, and I have one at the high school, one at the junior high, and two at Pacheco. And we live on the coast, and we've been driving back and forth to Pacheco. It's been worth everything. And I just wanted to voice my support for the Baywood program. And I know that everyone I talk to thinks that's a wonderful idea. So, I just wanted to voice my support. Thank you for everything you do. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Anyone else at this time?
Well,
I think he said she stepped out. So she'll just have to speak later. He said she stepped out. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm super short.
Okay, hi. Udelia Thompson.
I know. Good afternoon, board members. It's me again. Okay, so at the last meeting that I attended, a couple things were brought to my attention that I wanted to comment on today. For example, somebody mentioned that what if it's not a successful program or sustainable enough? Well, I kind of agree that by starting by 1 year, instead of all years all at once, it doesn't that serve in a way as a trial run to see how successful and sustainable this program can be? And a second thing, it's, I mean, it's not like we are reinventing the wheel. We already have an extremely successful school already in the district run by very much the same people that want to start this program. So I don't see it so much as it failing, just extending, much like a restaurant that is so successful that has to open somewhere else because the wait lines are just ridiculous. Also, I only have one child. So a lot of people actually ask me, where did I hear about Pacheco? Not knowing anything really about enrolling or anything like that. It was a nurse in my delivery room who has no children of her own. And so I think that speaks volumes of just how popular, how successful, and I mean, what a wonderful representation of our whole of a school within our county that a nurse that doesn't even have children knows so much about this school. I mean, she talked wonders. I remember that's all she talked about while I was in the delivery room, you know. So after that, I mean, my son was 4 days old when I was already Googling Pacheco Elementary School. I supported 100%. I don't think it's perfect. I see the issues that most community members have, but nothing in the world is perfect. And I really wish that you guys would pass this today and we can start as soon as possible. Because I think I would, oh my God, I would be so proud to have, you know, Baywood Elementary be my community school and call it a Spanish immersion class you know, I've already called everybody of my family who doesn't even live here just to just express my excitement of that this could actually happen. Anyway, thank you so much. Thank you for your time. I promise this might be the last time you hear from me. So thank you.
Thank you. So then, she wants to wait, and we don't have
Mr.
Wilson's wife.
Anyone else at
this
time? All right, then we'll carry on. All right, we are now moving into our superintendent's updates. First is business and budget, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, actually, at the next board meeting, I'm going to give a whole kind of rundown of our safety focus and all the steps we've been taking. But in particular, this last week, I've been meeting with Resolute Associates as well as our different pillar teams. So the board has a priority on safety this year, looking at the six areas, of course, for safe schools put together. And so they've been really good. In terms of just really breaking things down, getting all the leadership together, and really I think we're in a good step in terms of just working to change the culture, as well as make some specific steps towards ensuring safety at our site. So, again, at the next board meeting, I'll be giving the board a long update with all the steps kind of detailed out for you.
Thank you. Educational services update, Ms. McGrath.
Yes,
Ryan,
thank you.
Were you done? I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. I wanted to make sure you were done.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Just a couple of quick updates. We had a 9/11 ceremony that I want to give a little shout out to. Mr. Mayfield did an excellent job of helping to organize a way that really memorialized and gave some honor to especially the servicemen, firefighters, and police officers. And you would have been very proud of our students that were in attendance in the audience, but also gave some pretty incredible speeches that were quite moving. So it was a good moment for our students to shine on that memorial. Also had the real pleasure of serving on a subcommittee for our newly rolling foundation, where we were able to review grant submissions for the first round of grants, which they were calling innovation grants. These were really large, $10,000 could be applied for in these grants. They received 22 submissions, and it was so neat to be there, part of community members that really are supporting our school district and are proud of the things that are happening, and to see 22 incredible grants that, if we could, I think we would have supported every one of them. So I look forward to being able to tell you more about which ones were selected and next steps that are taken with that process.
Thank you. Measure D update.
And just to piggyback, Kim, for just a second in that, I think the thing that the public needs to understand is the foundation board themselves have all donated. So everybody on the foundation board has donated, and then that is what is paying, along with, we have a few public donations as well, I believe some board members, other people, but that foundation board in particular is making this happen. So the Diablo, mitigation funds, those types of things are not there yet, but the reason, all of those are being funded through those dollars and donations. So it's just a positive thing, right, to have a board that gives. In terms of the bond, just two things really quick. We walked San Luis Obispo High School this morning, the director of facilities, Mr. Bonner, and myself, looking at all the projects happening. There's a lot happening. And talking to staff, and in particular, it reemphasized the fact that we need to make sure that we're communicating well with our staff, that they understand the phasing, that they know what's happening, as well as with our community. So that's something that Mr. Bonner and myself will be putting an extra effort in over the next few weeks. And then lastly, we have a Citizens Bond Oversight Committee meeting next Monday. So that agenda just went out. And so for the public to know, we do have a Bond Oversight Committee. So citizens, basically, that review all of the expenditures for our bond measures and the Measure D dollars that come forward. And so we'll be going through the budgets, current expenditures, as well as taking a tour of San Luis Obispo High School.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Next, 8.01 is the resolution for authorization for outside credential assignments. Ms. Newland.
Yeah, so we ask that the board adopt this resolution. These are teachers that are teaching outside their credential area, but have been teaching these areas for quite a long time, very well-qualified teachers in our district, and they are excited about the subjects that they are teaching here.
All right. Any discussion among the board? Anyone from the public wishing to address this topic? Okay. Any board discussion? Mr. Millar.
I was just going to move the resolution, unless anyone else has comments.
Any further comments?
Just a quick comment to say that the programs that are being offered are very exciting and expansive for our kids, beginning journalism, ethnic studies, introduction to theater and sociology. I was just very excited to see those on the list.
Right. I'll move resolution number 051920.
I'll second. We have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. This is a resolution, so we need a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Frame?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, now we are moving into the discussion action portion of our meeting. Item 9.01, Board Priority 2, Coastal Bilingual Program. Dr. Prater.
Good evening, Board. I first would like to start by acknowledging all of you for your due diligence since last year when we began this process of discussing a coastal bilingual program and the potential merits as well as the potential drawbacks. I think we've done fairly extensive outreach. We've listened intensively to the feedback from the community, both pro and con. And tonight you can actually hear the different perspectives, and I just want to acknowledge the perspectives themselves. I think that that each of the from my perspective, when I hear the public speak about how such a program would impact their community, I think it's very important to listen and to acknowledge that. And I've tried to do that, and I am a big proponent of neighborhood schools, and I have been my whole life, and so I do understand the importance of that. And my intention here isn't to dismantle a neighborhood school. My intention is to harness the energy that exists in that neighborhood school, take and maintain the beautiful things that are happening there, and make, if you will, a strategic shift in some of the educational outcomes that could come from that school, and not just from Baywood itself, but also on a continuum through 12th grade. My interest is not just to look at this in an elementary context, but rather district-wide, K-12, city and coast. And I need to make that very clear. That is my interest. I feel that having a coastal opportunity and option for a bilingual program is added value, and over time, once we work out those kinks, I believe will be inspirational to the families and to the kids that live on the coast. And with that, I would like to put forward a recommendation to you, and this recommendation I completed last Friday following Thursday's lengthy board study session. I tried my best to capture the feedback that I heard, not just from the public, but also from individual board members. And one of the comments that we heard from the public resonates with me, and that was, don't allow perfect to get in the way of doing something good. And I believe that that this recommendation is the beginning of what will become, if you approve, a wonderful program for students.
one that I believe the parent community will, whether you're in Baywood, whether you're in Del Mar, or whether you're at Monarch Grove, will learn and grow to appreciate. That said, my recommendation is that we do transition Baywood Elementary School to a bilingual program pursuant to the following criteria. One, implement the 90-10 model that we currently have at Pacheco, that they just implemented just 3 years ago. That this 90-10 model of dual immersion, beginning with the kindergarten class in 2020-2021, with a multi-year rollout, adding one grade level each year. Two, enrollment. Now this one's tricky, and I just want you to bear with me. Priority will be given to students who live within the Baywood school boundary. Younger siblings of current Baywood students and coastal primary Spanish-speaking EL students. B, students in the Del Mar or Monarch Grove boundaries may apply to Baywood or Pacheco, expanding their options, if that's what they so choose. C, students who live within the Baywood school boundary can opt out of the program and attend either Monarch Grove or Del Mar elementary schools. D, continue the existing special education programs on the Baywood campus. I feel this is critical, and we can do it. E, continue the existing preschool on the Baywood campus with the exploration of elements of bilingual education. And F, and I consider this to be the most important one, is to develop with community input a long-term comprehensive enrollment plan. What this means, for those of you that are wondering what this means, is that we don't know what we don't know just yet. And F, meaning the long-term comprehensive enrollment plan, while we move this program forward, we'll begin to understand some of the comments that and concerns that we've been hearing regarding the splintering of the Baywood community, which I believe we need to hold intact as long as we can. Now, I noticed there's some lights on, so I want to pause for a moment to see if...
Mr. Unger, did you have a question at this time that can't wait till the end?
Yes, I do. Thank you. One clarification that I'd like at this point is you in recommendation, I believe it's number A and B. I'm assuming that Baywood parents, if they wish, because we have an open enrollment school district, may apply for Pacheco as well. Is that the intention?
Yes.
Thank
Good
you.
Clarification. Okay. Three. Develop a detailed implementation plan addressing the following areas. A, embed daily integration of Spanish and bicultural instruction across other Baywood grade levels during the transition. I think it's really important to understand that even though this 90-10 model will begin in the kindergarten year next year, if I have a child who's going to be in first grade or third grade or fifth grade, I certainly don't wish upon my child to feel disconnected in any way. So I feel that with the determination of this implementation team led by Principal Stevens, I believe this will become a way to harness the energy of the whole school and really bring them together. B, design an appropriate special day class model for a bilingual program. Now, it has been brought to my attention that people have not found an existing model for that. Well, for me, I'm excited about the challenge. I think that we have extraordinarily capable special education teachers and leaders. I met with Diane Frost, and as well as Rick Mayfield, as well as Principal Stevens. And we're going to work very closely with our special ed team and make sure that this really incorporates the best of our integration practices already, as well as
as well as things I haven't even figured out yet. But this group, I'm convinced, will come up with an outstanding model. C, enhance Spanish opportunities at the middle and high school levels district-wide. One of my concerns since arriving here in 2010 is that I've really felt that our transition from Pacheco to the middle school and high school was lacking. I didn't believe it was thorough. I believe that we can do a better job. And I intend to, and this is one of those moments that we have an opportunity to build out that program model. And D, transportation for students among Coast Elementary schools. So if I'm a parent in Baywood who wishes to opt out and move my child to Monarch, I want to make sure my child has transportation there. And we will provide that, as well as to Del Mar. E, priority for current Baywood staff needing to transfer in another placement in the district while trying to maintain consistency as long as possible at Baywood. I do value this feedback. I think it's important. And as we transition, if that's what the board decides is the direction we will go, we will work very closely on that transition plan with the existing staff to make sure that it's as smooth and reasonable as possible. F, regular progress updates to the board. I will keep, several board members have asked me, well, you know, what I want to make sure I'm kept in the loop as this goes along. And I absolutely will do that. In fact, we already selected dates if you were to approve this. So November 19th, January 14th, March 17th, and May 19th, as well as additional dates if you so choose. And these will be given to you by the implementation team for you to inquire, ask questions, deepen your understanding. My intention of this implementation team is that it's broad, it's diverse, so that people who have concerns and legitimate concerns have an opportunity to weigh in on this plan. And I want to make sure that that happens. G, financial support of the transition and program for this bilingual program. We're doing our best to identify what we think are the costs involved. The good news is the board has prioritized, and I want to be really explicit about this, the board has prioritized, and because of its work with equity over the last 2 years, understands the importance that equality and equity, equality is everybody gets the same thing. Equity, as we define it, is kids get what they need. And with that, makes this quite of an interesting challenge. Now, what I will tell you is that we have already prioritized that Title I schools in our district will receive additional funding beyond their Title I allocation, because that's where the greatest needs are in our district. That doesn't mean we're not providing support and great services to our other schools. But this has been identified as a priority by the board. In addition to that, this year we're identifying a new 3-year local control accountability plan. So it's a golden opportunity to redefine some of those things that students in our targeted populations of socioeconomically disadvantaged youth, English learners, and homeless foster youth, those students will receive and should receive additional supports. And so as we move along in this planning, we'll be conscious of those needs. And then H, a committee to begin the work of initial planning that includes district and site staff, coastal parent and community representation, and consultation with experts in the field. I suspect that we will dive in when the planning team hits a roadblock, we will dive in and find those out there that can help us kind of weave our way through this. Will it be perfect? No. Will it be really good? Because we care deeply about our kids, regardless of where they come from. It will be really good. And so this is my recommendation to you, and I welcome your feedback.
First, I'd like to go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this? If you could fill out a yellow sheet, it's helpful to us. Thank you.
Well, I have a...
Hello, my name is Anna Massey, former second grade immersion teacher for 7 years at Georgia Brown Elementary in Paso, former Spanish teacher and kindergarten assistant at Wishingwell, a Waldorf-inspired school in Los Osos. Former EL specialist here at Del Mar, thank you, Janet Gould, and currently a first grade immersion teacher at Pacheco. Thank you, Rick Mayfield and Chris Jones. I am also a mom to a LOM student in seventh grade and a fifth grader here at Del Mar. I am here tonight to speak to you because the possibility of starting a bilingual immersion at Baywood is something that I'm strongly interested in. First of all, I hope we can all agree that learning multiple languages has huge benefits. I myself have benefited tremendously from being bilingual. And though I was not fortunate to attend an immersion program, I 100% believe in an immersion program that is done with the intention of doing it with fidelity and as ethically and equitable as possible, that shows benefits for both EL and EO students. I, at this time, have reservations to the immersion program starting at Baywood next year. First, I think we will not have enough EL families to support two schools. I think that the current political climate is partly to blame. Also, we can't assume that all Spanish-speaking families necessarily want their children to learn in Spanish. EL numbers at Pacheco recently have decreased recently, and I attribute that to the political climate. Secondly, starting the program next year feels too rushed. The current program, 90-10 at Pacheco, is currently in fourth grade. I don't think we have gathered enough data on assessments comparing EL students at Pacheco with EL students at other English-only schools. In my opinion, there are still many unknown variables to consider. If the board does agree to move forward, I hope they consider these additional thoughts. By design, the immersion school at Baywood would be vastly different than Pacheco. In the spirit of equity, how will the district address these differences? K-5 versus K-6 school program, open concept classrooms, traditional classrooms, neighborhood school, commuter school, SDC bilingual model to a traditional model, a multi-language population with the one population. In closing, I know we all are here because we are trying to do our best to bring good quality education to all our students. If the board approves the program, I would love to be part of the diverse planning team that will help develop the program at Baywood. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Ms. Roger, let's get back on. Here.
Okay. Melissa, let's try again. And if you would please pronounce your last name. I'm sorry. I'm afraid to butcher it.
It's fine. Half the time they call me by the entire wrong name at school, so I don't mind. It's Melissa Dunois. It's Creole. It's my family's. I'm a current parent at Baywood Elementary. I also work there and I'm the PTA president, but I'm here tonight as a parent only, just to make that clear, although I obviously have interest everywhere. I sent a letter to the board, and I'm just going to kind of highlight a couple of the things that I talked about, and I want to just echo a lot of what our previous speaker said, mainly the fact that I feel like this timeline is virtually insane. For you to ask us to do it within a year without knowing all of the unknowns, or even having enough stuff behind us, enough research to show that what we're doing is really the right thing to do. There's so many pieces of data offered with the report. The enrollment of Coast students at Pacheco being repeated several times, but the numbers were never broken down into native Spanish students and native English speakers. Currently at Baywood, we have around 7, I think, in the kinder class that are EL. That might even be not the correct number. How does that fit into the model of equity, which of course echoes what she's saying, is that we are seeing a reduced number of EL families for several reasons. Much of this discussion has been framed around offering higher quality instruction to our native Spanish speakers, but there are far more native English speakers who would benefit, and the SBAC numbers so far that we're being asked to consider as, well, we look at data from Pacheco, as this is our model of what we're using, but we're not allowed to actually look at that data because there's not enough. And that's what we were told by looking at the report. Yet the SBAC numbers show that the benefits are much greater for middle and upper middle class white students who are native English speakers. So how can we possibly claim we are doing this for underserved populations while touting the brain benefits of learning a second language, which would primarily be for the English students? The Spanish speakers now lose that opportunity to have that learn in two languages until we move on to like fourth grade, right? Where they're learning less English. And the other thing I wanted to just touch on quickly is funding is a major issue for any new program, and our district is facing a huge reduction in costs. We're cutting costs everywhere, and the solutions, as offered in the report, not necessarily what you just talked about, were just very nebulous. Oh, let's get a grant from the state. A grant, that grant hasn't been made official through the state yet. You can't possibly count on that, and we don't even know if we qualify. And the grant application cycle doesn't even start till next year, which means we wouldn't get the money till the following year after that. And yet we want to start this now before we wouldn't even get the money for 2 years. And then you're asking the Education Foundation to fund the rest of it.
Thank you.
But, okay. Eno Brito?
Buenas noches a las de la mesa. Mi nombre es Eno Brito.
Good evening. My name is Ito Brito.
Estoy aquí para soportar el programa bilingüe y contarles un poquito de mi experiencia.
I am here to support the bilingual coastal program and tell you a little bit about my experience.
Mi esposa y yo tenemos cuatro niños.
My wife and I have four children.
Bueno, el más grande tiene 18, pero lo considero mi niño todavía.
Well, my oldest is 18, but he's still my little boy.
Todos han asistido a la escuela Pacheco y básicamente es algo maravilloso, no nada más porque seamos yo sea hispano, pero he visto todas las culturas juntas y cómo se juntan ahí, especialmente mis hijos que se juntan con todos, y es maravilloso verlos la comunidad junta.
All of my four children attended Pacheco Elementary, and it was a wonderful thing to see the cultures come together and see my own children interacting and learning cultural things.
¿Y qué más maravilloso si hay una oportunidad aquí cerca de nosotros que se las podamos dar a nuestros hijos y a nuestros nietos futuros?
And what a wonderful thing it would be if we can have this opportunity for other students and even our future grandchildren.
Les sugiero y les que visiten bien esto, y sería algo muy grande para nuestra comunidad aquí.
I really recommend you look into this, and it would be such a wonderful thing in this community.
Todos mis hijos pasaron, fueron, atendieron a Pacheco. Mi hijo más grande ya se graduó y se graduó con honores de la high school.
All of my children attended Pacheco. My oldest graduated with top honors.
Y ahora está atendiendo a la Universidad de Chico.
And now he's attending Chico State.
Para nosotros es algo muy maravilloso otra vez, que les pido que por favor consideren esto. Y la verdad sería algo maravilloso.
Again, it's been a wonderful thing for us, and I ask that you really consider this because it would be a wonderful thing.
Gracias.
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 Thank you.
Okay, then Charlotte D'Annunzio.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Charlotte D'Annunzio. I am a mother of two Pacheco children. One recently graduated and is now in seventh grade. The other one is one of the 90-10 program first kids. She's in the fourth grade, and I know it's scary. I mean, I happen to be bilingual myself, but I know plenty of other parents at the school who don't speak Spanish. They don't know how to do the homework. They are laughing, saying, what does this mean? And the kids explaining it to the parent. From kinder all the way through, you know, till the end. It's an amazing feeling when your child comes home singing songs in Spanish and telling you what they mean, and you wouldn't, it just blows your mind how quickly they learn, how quickly all your fears about them being in a classroom with completely different language, it just doesn't matter, especially not when they're in kindergarten. Everything Dr. Prater said in his presentation I thought was incredibly thoughtful, specifically about the neighborhood school. I happen to live in Baywood. I happen to have would have loved to have sent my children there and not be driving every day. I drive electric, by the way. But it's a wonderful opportunity. It is an absolute gift, no question. It changes the way they think. It broadens their reach because their brain is learning in two different languages at the same time. Sometimes my daughter speaks, she's reading something in Spanish, and we might talk about it for a minute. I don't really speak Spanish at home because I have a funny accent, which you may have noticed in English as well. Anyway, I look at her and I say, was that in Spanish or English? And she said, what's the difference? And, you know, she's a good student, but she's just a normal student. She's not, like, supersonic. It's just a wonderful community. It's an incredible place to be. Everyone loves it. Not only that, but I know tons of people in Baywood who would just love to be able to send their kids to a bilingual program right there. Obviously, I also know people personally who feel as Cindy Goodyear does. And it looks like Dr. Prater has their concerns in mind, too. So thank you very much for considering this. I'm sure you're looking back at what happened when Pacheco was first created and how much of a ruckus that caused. And luckily, you can ask Rick all about that. Thank you very much for being here and for having us.
Thank you.
So then I just wonder if Mr. Wilson's wife has returned.
It doesn't look like it.
Okay, then. Then is there anyone who has not submitted a form but would like to speak to this item?
All right, then at this time we'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, first of all, I wanted to thank everybody who's taken the time to write me, who's taken the time to come to the meetings, to share their feelings, both pro and con, for the notion of establishing a dual immersion bilingual school at Baywood School. I'm going to start out by saying I am going to support this. Although I believe that there are, as we've heard, there are many questions that remain to be answered. Probably a month ago, I attended a conference in Chicago, a leadership conference. And one of the things that one of the speakers talked about was how. And I think those are the questions that we're going to need to get answered. And it's not going to be a simple one-off how. It's going to be, how is this? And we're going to hear an answer, I'm hoping. And then we're going to ask how some more. And we're going to ask how some more. Because although I know and you know, and I keep hearing we won't have something perfect, we will. It is our intention. I think it is the intention of the board to have the highest quality programs that we can possibly have no matter what. I do have some concerns. The first, I think one of the things that we've actually heard is the startup costs. We've heard about $140,000, but I think the startup cost at Pacheco was about $250,000. I'd be interested to know what precipitates the difference between the two, because you know $106,000 is a lot of money, right? So I'd be interested in knowing that. I'm also kind of interested in knowing what I'm still not so sure about the effect of the school on our other schools. And one of the things that occurred to me as we're sitting here is, in fact, we received a letter on it. Why do we have school boundaries the way that we have the school boundaries in Los Osos? And I'm here to tell you why we have those boundaries the way we have them. Mr. Millar was at the meetings when we decided that, and I will tell you it was one of the most difficult things that I've ever done as a school board member. Quite simply, we did it to protect Baywood. We did it because at the time Monarch was not a Title I school, but Baywood was a Title I school. And we knew that it was important for the because of the demographics of Baywood to preserve that for Baywood. Well, now that Monarch is a Title I school, Del Mar is a Title I school, I'm concerned about what would happen to the school funding if either of the schools drop below their Title I, their current Title I population. For example, let's say that, you know, for those of you who don't know, a Title I school is based on the total number of students who qualify for free and reduced lunch. And it's a percentage of those students. So if we get to a place where, for example, Monarch drops below, slightly below, what their Title I allocation is, dropping them off as a Title I school, but let's say it's 2-3 students, we still have a high number of Title I students. What are we going to do about that? Because that need is not going to go away. So I think that's going to be important to me. I applaud reaching out to the community, and we will need to do that. Because what I keep, you know, what I hear is there's a fear that we will lose Baywood as a community school, as the strong school community that it is. We must never lose that. I need to know more about the plans for special education. What I heard was we want to have a robust special education program that meets the needs of all the students. I need to know what that looks like. I need to know the how for that. That is very important to me. I think this is an opportunity. Over my almost 20 years on the board, I have heard consistently from parents, why don't we have a dual immersion program on the coast? Overwhelmingly, the letters I've gotten, the emails I've gotten, people don't write letters anymore, they write emails, have been overwhelmingly in support of the program. I'm going to support it, but I'm going to ask for the hows, and I will need to see details that will assuage my concerns and the community concerns.
Anyone else? Mr. Buckman?
Can I borrow your new microphone? First, I also want to say thanks to the community and the thoughtfulness and the taking the time out of your busy days to come here and to write emails. And I think it's really a testament to the families in this community. I also want to thank Don, Rick, and Eric for the thoughtful research, the outreach to the community, and this recommendation to the board. I'm also going to lend my support, my voice, at this early time, because I know that there's a lot of other things that are come before us, and I'm not seeing this as any final endorsement. This one's a little hard for me. As a member of the equity team, district equity team, and as a graduate of the Equity Institute that the district hosted last year, I'm now always trying to view the district through that equity lens. And I know staff has equity on its radar as well. And we talk about the social as well as curricular immersion. I think Dr. Prater called it an integration of Spanish in the bicultural curriculum. And having this new equity lens, I also am hoping and looking for the classroom to playground integration and the PTA to ELAC integration. And I just sort of like to put that out there. Appreciate it. I also, Dr. Prater, I am also concerned, as I was last time and I was brought up tonight, that we're going to have enough students to make this viable. And so I'm hoping that you'll continue to look at that. And as a board member, I'm hoping that as we have those meetings that you've talked about giving us updates, that for me, the budget's also going to be a huge consideration. And I'd like to know, like to be able to see, like to be able to hear the budget implications either as they develop, but certainly before May, because we'll be so deep into the budget by May. Thanks, and I really appreciate all the work that was done.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I have a question about item 2A, the enrollment and priorities. The way it's worded lumps together kids currently living in the school boundary and siblings, and then Spanish-speaking EL students. That concerns me because we're going to have a coastal dual immersion program. We should always admit primary Spanish-speaking students. And as I understand it, that's what we do at Pacheco, where they're not waitlisted. So I'm looking for confirmation about that.
Yeah, it's a really good question. There's been some assumptions that have been established because of Pacheco that I may not necessarily adhere to. And one of those is the 50-50 assumption. We've known that when you look at the number of students that go from the coast into the city to attend Pacheco, there's approximately 140, 150 students, of which half of those are English learners. Now, we're not asking to bring students back from Pacheco. That's not what this is. This is, like we said, a roll-up. So assuming all remains the same and assuming that the political environment adjusts and hopefully becomes safer for our ELs, families, that we want to open that up. So what you see in 2A is the commitment to maintain Baywood as a priority. Meaning, if you live in the Baywood boundary, you can send your child to this school without going through the lottery system. Okay. Also, if you're at Baywood and you might be living in your home might be in the Monarch Grove boundary, and then let's say you have a third grader, but then you have a incoming kindergartner while we start this program, it's not fair that the sibling would not be allowed to attend, potentially. And then the third piece is to get to your point, Mr. Millar, is that we want to open this up to our English learners on the coast. Yeah. But we're certainly not going to make them attend, right? It's because Monarch Grove, Del Mar are thriving schools. And many of the families value that neighborhood environment, and so do I. So this program, as we develop, and that's why there's still some uncertainties and unknowns, but that's why this program is a bilingual program on the coast, and our intention is to move towards a more balanced population of ELs and EOs. But right out of the gate, we can't predict that because we're talking about kindergartners, and we don't know about kindergarten roundup until late spring. So again, we'll leave it open as a priority for Baywood residents, for siblings that are currently attending Baywood School, and for our coastal primary English learner families that wish to attend. And that's how we're going to start. Now, if you're familiar with boating and trim tabbing, this is going to be an exercise of trim tabbing. It's going to be each year we're going to learn. We're going to see what we've learned from the year before, and we'll make the necessary adjustments. But I think A is a critical response to the to the matter of trying to seek a more balanced population of students in a bilingual program. But given the numbers I see, I don't see a 50-50 model being the case. It may be 60-40, it may be less than that, but that's at least an option for our families.
Thank you. And so I'm looking at B and C under subpart 2, and I assume that's so we can have some reciprocity between transfers among these three schools and maintain the population and maintain parent and guardian intent where they want the child to go. I think that's a very good option. Transportation, of course, a critical component to making that real. And I'm glad to see about the Title I funds, and I thought Chris's question about what happens if our Title I populations drop too low at some of our Title I schools, but that's something. And I appreciate the nautical reference as an old Navy man. We decide whether the mission is worthwhile, we, the board, and if we do consider it worthwhile, and I certainly do, I join Chris and Mark in their remarks, then we give the sailing orders, and we have a wonderful team who will hopefully navigate us to our goals. And we have a wonderful population. I got 11 emails just today. I have the names. I was going to read them out, but you know who you are. And I appreciate the input. This is one of those items in my almost 20 years where so much input and so not just supportive, because there were concerns that were expressed, but all of it came from a place of enriching children's lives and advancing our kids. I think we've got the pros to deliver a dual immersion program here on the coast. I know we've got the community involvement to help keep us real if we're dropping the ball in places, and I appreciate your improvement, and I'm going to support the recommendation.
Mrs. Rogers.
Thank you. I have several questions. The first is, Dr. Prater, I understand what you're expressing in 2A, but I would like you to elaborate a little more, if you can, on what develop a long-term comprehensive enrollment plan means in 2F.
Thank you. I wrote this before I received a few of the letters today.
Okay.
And from the public, who beautifully articulated a position of concern regarding the what-ifs and the integrity of maintaining the integrity of Baywood. And this individual in particular that I'm thinking of, I didn't agree with everything, but I really agreed with the spirit behind it. I agreed with the intention of and the concern, but this particular individual said, well, we should guarantee a 10 or 20 year guarantee. Well, my opinion on F is connected to the ebbs and flows of a community, the ebbs and flows of our district over time. And I believe that the coastal community should have an ability to, in fact, one of the individuals that wrote me this letter, I'm going to suggest and ask that she be on this planning team and help develop this, because she's got some really good concerns, and I can tell that she's super thoughtful. So to answer your question about this, is my instincts when I wrote this, and based on all the feedback I had heard, my instincts tell me that I don't have a totally clear view 100 yards out. I feel very confident in the recommendation. I don't fully understand the implications of the enrollment, because kindergarten enrollment changes from year to year. And so making planning and making making hard agreements right now regarding something that you won't know until April or May, what you can do right now is say priority will be given. So as we develop our enrollment plan, as we kind of pull this together, what I've learned is I have one view of things, but when I surround myself with smarter people, usually the outcome is far better. So what that really is, Mrs. Roger, is my way of saying we're going to pull a team together of people that really have a concern around this issue, and we're going to try our best to develop a long-term comprehensive enrollment plan that meets the needs of those that live on the coast with regard to a program that we're just now starting. So I imagine this will be a robust conversation. It will take months, but I plan on bringing you the updates as per this agreement over the next year to give you updates on what that looks like. But my goal is that we'll develop some sort of formula and well-articulated plan that is prioritized, that is detailed, and has a more exhaustive view of what could happen so that we can keep the Baywood community intact. And that's not as easy as it seems, not as there's a lot of variables in there. And, you know, Mr. Pinkerton said to me, gosh, I think it was on Monday, that he woke up in the middle of the night and he said, have you thought about this? And have you thought about that? And I think for the next 6 months, that's what we're all going to be doing. And I want to open up a system that accepts that feedback and tries to come up with a well-vetted, thoughtful enrollment plan. I think we're going to be fine as we go in for the next few years. I think it'll get more complicated as we define the demand for the program, as we really weigh in on some of the unexpected needs of our family members that we didn't think about before. And I want to remain nimble and flexible enough to address those without hard and fast. But you said, but what I can promise you and commit to you is that my intentions are good here. These recommendations are honest, and I gave it my best thinking to capture the concerns I heard, as well as move this idea forward so that the implementation team can do what they do best, which is put together a great program for kids. 2F is to anticipate future needs to hold a community together that while this program is being developed. Does that make sense?
It does make sense to me. Thank you.
Yep.
Then my next question has to do with 3F, where you're proposing that we have regular progress updates, four of them between now and the 19th of May. And as so much community interest has been expressed in this whole possible bilingual transition, I'm wondering if I could ask, I have an interest in going to the same lengths to get information about those meetings out to the community as we went to in the process over the past year, so that people who are interested parties will be able to attend specific meetings where there'll be updates on the dual immersion program.
That's a great idea. I will do that.
Okay, thank you. And then the last one has to do with cost. I had a lengthy conversation with Mr. Pinkerton, and I wonder if you feel prepared to discuss how you arrived at the cost numbers or why you think these startup costs would be substantially less than Pacheco startup costs. Or if you'd like to do that in Friday notes, if you're not prepared.
I mean, to a certain extent, I honestly wasn't here when they started Pacheco in terms of the amount and 200 and how they came up with that and what happened. So I don't necessarily know that aspect of it. Mr. Mayfield maybe can. and he can help with the, in terms of some of the costs. I will say in terms of enrollment, too, just to tie in a little bit of what Dr. Prater said, so and just for the board's own knowledge, Monarch Grove is already at a point where they're close to losing Title I status. So just so that everyone knows that starting this program, I don't think is going to be the thing that's going to take Monarch Grove out of Title I. If anything, it may actually improve their chances by keeping students on the coast in terms of the number, the population. So those 130, 150 students that are currently going to Pacheco, if some of those stay on the coast, students from Baywood go to Monarch Grove, it could actually help that Title I status, you know, for the school. I will tell you that in talking to both Los Osos Middle School site principals, this has been ongoing for the past 8 years that I've worked for the district, as well as Morro Bay High, that they want to keep kids on the coast. And so what we've heard before is that when kids go to Pacheco, they end up going to Laguna and staying at San Luis High, predominantly. And so their programs are so predicated on keeping students here in the enrollment at both Los Osos Middle School as well as Morro Bay High so that they can have the same programs that we have at San Luis Obispo High School is a big part of this whole kind of keeping kids on the coast part of it. So I think that's important to acknowledge, right, is one of the aspects. And honestly, I think our biggest issue in terms of the long-term enrollment plan is going to be how are you going – there's going to be so many – honestly, in seeing Pacheco, there's going to be so many people that want to be part of this program that how are you going to keep you know, limit that in terms of the other two sites. It's going to be interesting to see that dynamic and how it moves forward. Rick will talk a little bit about, I know that he talked with Lisa and with Kim about kind of this initial startup, what that's going to look like. So I'm going to have Rick talk about that, and then I'll follow up.
Thank you.
Just briefly, the Pacheco program began in kindergarten in 1996. And as far as I know, as a teacher at the time, there was no additional funding initially for the program. The federal government offered Title VII grants. At that time, Title VII was bilingual money, and the grants were up to $1.25 million for a five-year period of time. So that's the $250,000 per year. We wrote the grant in the late 1990s, I want to say 98. It was declined, and then we brought Catherine Lindholm on board in 99. It was awarded the $1.25 million, and that began in the 2000 and 2001 school year, I believe. It lasted 5 years. It was $250,000 each of those years for 5 years. It wasn't that we budgeted or we needed $250,000. That's just what was available from the federal government. So that's what we applied for. My timing wasn't great. I left right after we wrote the grant, and it was funded. I was gone 5 years, the 5 years of the grant, and I returned as principal the first year that the grant was finished. And I remember sharing with the staff a memo that Mr. Miller had written the year before saying, you need to spend X amount of dollars for your classroom this year because it's money that won't carry over. And at the time, we had overhead projectors, and I put the memo on the overhead projector, and I said, see this memo? You will never see anything like it again. Okay, so needing to spend money is just not something, you know, that needs to happen. So that would explain the difference. You know, our $144,000 is an estimate for what it would be for startup costs. You know, there are some costs associated with doing something like this, buying Spanish books, having some extra personnel there to plan. But, you know, I think it's money well spent.
And so we do have allocation for Yale students. So just so the board knows, every year we go, Mr. Mayfield, Kim, McGrath, myself, we look at our budget, we look at the number of students. And so that allocation of staff, of resources, that happens. So that is something that we will be looking at in terms of the number of students at Baywood. Are there going to be more ELs? So there are dollars that follow EL students. So they will have extra funds depending on. Now that could mean that Monarch Grove or Del Mar, maybe, right, would have less EL students. But I'm assuming that some of that is going to come from Pacheco. So that, you know, if they have less students going to Pacheco, that is going to, potentially those dollars would follow them to Baywood.
Correct.
So that's, you know, that's the big part of it. I think initially the two things really, as Mr. Mayfield said, is going to be the extra support for Mrs. Stevens to get the program off the ground. I think it's going to be critically important for her as she tries to run a school while she's getting this going. And then also the resources part for teachers, right, as we build that each year into the program. And then lastly for me, just in terms of enrollment, I will say, you know, there's not a lot of new development on the coast. So I think it keeping students on the coast is a positive thing for our schools on the coast. And keeping the student populations at a certain amount. We've seen some, you know, over the last 4 years that I've been doing enrollment, we saw some declines on the coast where I started to worry where, you know, we lost teachers at Baywood. We lost teachers at Monarch Grove. You know, we have a little bit bigger populations in kindergarten the last 2 years, which has brought some more teachers on. But the board has also made it a priority to add staff, keep class sizes low. So that has helped as well. And I think pulling some of those students back to the coast with all of the growth happening in San Luis Obispo area, potentially in student growth, with the number of houses being built, we'll see how many students we get out of those developments. But this could be a positive thing, I think, for city schools as well in overall enrollment projections. So, but that's something, again, that long term, we don't know necessarily today what that's going to look like. So I think that's part of Dr. Prater's goal with F is to, you know, that, hey, we are going to start to think about this and what are the things that are going to be put in place.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Mayfield.
You bet.
Dr. Isabeth Rogers.
I'd just like to thank those of you who sent emails to us and who came tonight to speak. It's very helpful to receive your input. Someone tonight started by saying this program is a gift to our children, and I very much agree with that statement. I think it is a gift to be bilingual. I think it brings our community closer together. Hopefully it'll bring the world eventually closer together. I know that my children who matriculated through our system here at San Luis Coastal wish they had had the opportunity to be bilingual through a program like this. And so I feel like I can speak on behalf of young citizens who are out there now who wish they had the opportunity to communicate more clearly. I spoke with Principal Stevens today, and I just wanted to ask her about her thoughts about healing her community. And she talked to me about not only having the DLAC families work, you know, working together, but also to with the PTA and becoming a very tight community that is supportive of each other. So all of these things make me just feel very, very comfortable to give this gift to our children.
Ms. Frame.
Thank you. First, I would like to thank all the families and community members for being so engaged. And I would also like to thank the fellow board members and staff that have dedicated so much time. And I would like to give a particular shout out to Ms. Stevens for her compassion for, you know, parents who are struggling with this, families in addressing the potential expansion. One of the things that, you know, is related to, or one of the things I was thinking about as I'm trying to frame this, is that, you know, an overarching coastal issue surrounding the dual immersion program, both pro and con. And a parent wrote to me that, you know, the broader picture is looking at, the coastal view of a TK through 12 program. I mean, we do have an issue of families staying in town, which impacts the type of courses that could be offered at Morro Bay High School and Loams. And I think one of a secondary teacher was kind of talking about that. So, and we already, right now, are losing families in town, either via Teach or via Pacheco. So, you know, it is an issue, and it's particularly hard on our coastal community. So if I look at it through the lens of maintaining the integrity of a coastal option, TK through 12, my lens has changed a bit, but I absolutely am concerned about the sustainability and the viability of this program. Because you are the coastal schools are disproportionately going to affect to be impacted, which means that if the program, if we do not if we are not robustly funding it and in it for the long haul, we have unintended consequences that we have disrupted neighborhood schools, you know, alum schools. So I think that is a huge issue that we have to look at is the unintended consequences. If we are not all in and all in for a long time, then you are going to, you know, not have the realization at, you know, that, that families will stay and we'll be back to square one. So just thought I'd throw that out there. So one of the things, looking at that enrollment issue, it was my understanding, Dr. Prater, is that, you know, it's been viewed as a coastal expansion, right? And so Baywood families would have priority, but I've heard from a ton of other families, you know, at the other schools that they will be able to get in. It's not like we're going to say, you know, is there a cap that they're looking? I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. So, sorry.
Yes, yeah, so if I understand your question, it's...
Probably it, not, but no.
If I understand what you just asked, it's will the... If I'm a living in Monarch Grove boundary mm-hmm. and I have an incoming kindergartner, mm-hmm. will I be guaranteed enrollment into the Baywood program? Mm-hmm. And the assumption that I thought I heard you say is they're thinking they will have access... guaranteed space?
Well, I think what I've heard from a lot of families uh-huh. from, you know, Monarch and also Baywood, and again, I thank you. And, you know, their excitement about the program and, you know, the buzz in the community is that it was presented to them as coastal expansion. And, you know, retracting on that and saying, like, oh, well, we're not going to do that. You know, changes kind of the dynamics, even though, you know, we're looking at maintaining and making sure that the Baywood families are taken into consideration. But, you know, the coastal families have looked upon that as it's been labeled, coastal expansion of a dual immersion program.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've been careful to do is not say, absolutely, everyone gets to enter this school no matter what, and I've never, ever presented it that way. However, I can understand the perception. Mm-hmm. With that said, we've had so many meetings now just kind of presenting it, and mm-hmm. one of the things that I anticipate as the implementation team puts their pieces together is that there will be... greater levels of outreach. We'll continue to come out into the community, Del Mar, Monarch Grove, Baywood, and start that conversation. Mm-hmm. I also want, and our board knows this, I asked a question at a board study session around Measure D last month. And the question I asked when we were talking about Baywood in particular, and I have some strong reasons why I think Baywood is an appropriate place for this model, is I asked the question to staff, does Baywood have the ability to expand? And what I do know is that we set aside money in our Measure D budget to put interior walls into what is currently sort of an open concept school built several 70s. Decades ago. And I remember when that was the big deal. I was a little kid. And what I can tell you is we have money set aside for interior walls. In addition to that, I asked the question about the portables in the back. And I asked, are those able to expand? In other words, the utilities underneath, can we add some more classrooms on the campus? And the answer to that was yes. So we have money to fix the roof at Baywood. We have some money to retrofit the interior spaces, and we have the potential to expand the portables. Okay? Now, that's important to know. The other piece that's important to know is as we figure out capacity and we determine this long-term comprehensive enrollment plan, given the criteria that's there, if we only have so much space, then that is what we have. We can't promise what we don't have. But we will open up opportunities that don't currently exist by doing this. So there will be greater opportunities, no doubt about it, for our coastal families to have this program. That said, I wanted to also mention that and remind the board that Baywood is one of the few schools in our district that qualifies for state modernization money into the millions. And I would urge, well, I will just say, we fully anticipate to apply for that money so that Baywood can get the resource, maximize the resources that they're due. And it's such a beautiful campus. It just needs some love. And I think we're about to do that. And this program, you mentioned, you know, proper funding, making sure we're all in.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. We have, that's part of this decision, I assume, is that we're going to be all in. Because I just don't do things well, not all in. And so this would be an all-in mindset. And Baywood will get the best we can give them. In addition to all that, to get back to your question, as we develop and implement the plan or the actual program and address the needs stated in this recommendation, I also will communicate to the best of my abilities to the other community members outside of the Baywood boundary that depending on space, an available space, will determine their entry into the program. So that's why I mentioned in there that they can also apply to Pacheco. So we are expanding access. This is, right now, Baywood has 3 kindergarten classes.
Mm-hmm.
If they have 4 kindergarten classes in the 2020-2021 school year, because they're K-5, if you expand that out, they'll have a school of about 480 students, okay? Which would make it the largest elementary school on the coast. But that will happen over time. That won't happen overnight. So we'll have time to develop a plan, do the necessary adjustments and trim tabs as we go. I think it's the best. I think as we lay this out strategically, I think all those things will line up over that time period, and I think if the demand is there, then I could envision that becoming a thriving school community, bilingual program community.
Okay, thank you. So. And we don't know this, but we could potentially have a waiting list on the coast, too?
I expect that.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, to be looked at as we develop this.
That's right.
Okay.
And know that I don't know because kindergarten roundup isn't until April or May.
I'm familiar with that roundup.
You are familiar with that.
I just want to let you know. Okay, the other thing is I share the, and I really am absolutely wildly nervous about our position on SDC classes. Just because I was, you know, taking the view of my, you know, myself as a parent and not having a model but trying to create the model, it allows for creativity. But, you know, we're already dealing with really fragile learners. So, and we don't have, you know, our schools of choice in town do not have SDC classes. And so now, are we setting the precedent that the coastal school of choice will have SDC classes, but our in-town classes won't? I mean, is that a policy that we need to look at for other schools of choice so that, you know, I'm throwing that out there that, you know, it is... you know, we do have, you know, schools of choice in town that do not have any SDC classes, and they have developed those programs. And on some level, that impacts neighborhood schools in town because, you know, other schools are having to, you know, carry a bigger load. So just thought, So I'm not asking for a question, but I'm just throwing this out there. The other thing I think I was looking at was the 2E. And, you know, Miss, oh my gosh, Floyd Moffat? I'm sorry. Oh my gosh, Fiona. I'm so sorry, Fiona. You know, everybody is over the moon. You know, just absolutely loves. And as we look at the Pacheco model, and yes, Baywood will need to look differently, but one of the things that I hear strongly as it relates to TK from our EL families and from also the Yale families is having the TK option at Baywood, but we don't have that. So that impacts, you know, how we look at, you know, it looks at, you know, dollars. It also looks at, you know, the efficacy of, you know, doing the dual immersion program because Pacheco has expanded. So that is, you know, a concern that we don't have, that we may lose some of our EL families because we don't have. And if we are not going to have a TK program there, then we're asking them to go to different schools until they get into that program. And we're not asking them to do that at Pacheco. So just another thought for consideration. I know.
Are you think, but Pacheco doesn't have a TK.
Oh, they don't? Are you sure?
They have preschool. They don't have TK.
Okay, I'm bad. Sorry about that.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's fine.
Okay, sorry. Don't laugh at me. Okay. Okay. A second thing is, you know, the implications for Title I at other schools. It may be something that as we tease out what that SED population, and I've talked to Ms. McGrath about that some of our schools, and I'm, you know, believe me, we want the money, but if you look at those actual SED disaggregating the data, there are schools that we have that they're not the needy students. You know, the parents are, you know, they're building a home and they're living with somebody up, and that's a great thing, but we also need to make sure that you know, those dollars are really going to those families. And so for some of our schools, they may be receiving money, but and that's great, but the data, when we look at it, you know, may not reflect really what's currently going on. So I think, you know, Mr. Pinkerton was relating that, you know, some of our schools may be losing it no matter what. The other thing is... let's see. Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayfield, for clarifying the $250,000. Although I will say that beyond that grant, Pacheco did receive $250,000. About, you know, beyond the grant, and there was at one point there was, you know, budget. They were receiving $250,000, and then they. It was reduced to $100,000 when we were under a budget crisis. So, you know, $250,000 when Pacheco was started, things were a lot less expensive. Now, books are more expensive, staffing is more expensive, we're not using the same template. So I am absolutely concerned that, we can't shortchange that, and we can't rely on grants. So how much of, you know, the actual general fund, and not LCAP money, because that's changed, but our general fund money, were we going to guarantee for this site to be a success? Something, I don't. So I think, and the last thing is, how will the committee be formed? I know a lot of people have interest in it. Is, you know, do you put your name in? It's a lottery. You know, as I think because we're impacting every single coastal school and we want the viability of it to keep our coastal families, you know, TK through 12, what does that process look like so our coastal families believe and see that it's, you know, transparent and inclusive? And thank you.
That last question is really important too, as well as your others. That
the committee. How will that be formed? I actually have a conference call with Ms. Stevens tomorrow, and I think that's, assuming this does move forward, part of that conversation is how do we move forward? What does that look like? What does the committee look like? The selection process? Who does she need on her team to move this forward? And we're going to have those conversations in the next day or two.
So my last is, so if, and it sounds like we will be moving forward on this, we will not have, I guess, you know, and I would think about this as a parent, a guarantee that really we, you know, the intent is to keep our families on the coast so that we can offer robust programs at the high school. I mean, we already do, but even more so. You know, I see that it's, you know, 6 years, but that doesn't seem like it's enough to really ensure that we can then impact the secondary sites, I guess is what I'm saying. So do we have a buy-in for longer?
So so the transition from here to middle school is 6 years.
Uh-huh.
For next year's incoming kindergartners,
mm-hmm.
7 years, actually. And that doesn't mean that we're going to start 7 years from now transitioning at the middle level.
Mm-hmm.
I've already met with the middle school principals
mm-hmm.
to discuss this. We're actually going to start planning this next year because you still have students from Pacheco who live on the coast who end up going to Laguna.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm intending to encourage them to come back to the coast, to Loams, and have a program for them. And so we're building those components this year for next year.
Okay.
So by the time these kiddos in kindergarten next year reach the middle school,
mm-hmm.
either in the city or in the coast,
mm-hmm.
my goal is to have a thriving and well-defined middle and high school pathway for those kiddos that experience the bilingual program in mm-hmm. elementary, as well as kids who didn't but would like to develop Spanish at middle school, and we'll offer that as well. So that's kind of the takeaway that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that while I value Teach and Pacheco, it bothers me that families from the coast leave the coastal communities that they live in to attend schools of choice. So I'm just throwing it out there that this is part of mm-hmm. my feeling, that I think it's an amazing coastal community that we have. And I just would like to see this program, which I know will be popular, and to take off and be something that is available for our families that live here.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Brady. There, one last thing, and I was a parent asked me this, and was if a preschool, Pacheco family, is in the preschool currently at Pacheco, and they're a coastal family, and they're seeing, oh, now I don't have to leave. Will that option to come back be available for those families?
Yeah, I believe so, because they're a coastal family.
Yeah.
And more than likely, if they're at the Pacheco preschool, more than likely they're an EL.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Millar, then Mr. Unger.
I just wanted to mention, excuse me, that I talked with Jim Miller, and he was encouraging us to adopt the program for the coast. And he was also very complimentary of Rick Mayfield and his involvement in this project. And so I thought I'd pass it on because he knows from whence he speaks.
Mr. Unger.
Thanks. And thank you for the conversation. One of the things that the questions that Mrs. Frame was asking brought to mind, and I think, Mr. Pinkerton, you talked about it a little bit, was what if the program is wildly successful? So wildly successful that we have to start looking at a waiting list. Well, if this is truly going to be a coastal school of choice, then we must do everything we can to assure our coastal families that there won't be a waiting list. I know that we can't predict, I know we can't do that, but it is It is my sincere hope that we will do everything we can to accommodate every family that would like to take this option. So I'm just going to leave it with that with you guys.
That would be fabulous if we are able to do that. I just don't know what the demand will look like. No one does, really.
Okay. I wanted to make a couple of comments. And one, I'd like to point out that in our schools in San Luis Obispo, we still have EL kids. We still have, that's the thing about a school of choice, is that we're not telling kids where to go. We're presenting options and opportunities that are different from the options and opportunities at the other schools. I don't see in any way, shape, or form that that Monarch Grove or Del Mar will be diminished by offering a dual immersion program. I think that they're great schools. We will continue to support them as we always have. We're not taking our eye off of those schools in order to direct all our attention to something else should the dual immersion program go forward. I think that similar to San Luis Obispo, there are families of EL students who choose to have their kids in an English-only school because they feel that that will be the greatest benefit to their students, and that's what choice means. We're not pushing kids, we're providing an option. So all our schools are good schools, and I appreciate the balance of students, the balance, both the diversity. That's what this is about. That's what a community is all about, is having all kinds of students at each of our schools, and I feel strongly about that. I think that all the input we've received has been well considered and considered valid and important to, I don't usually try and speak for other people, but I will in this instance, to my colleagues and me, to all of us. We've carefully considered all the input, and it has affected our thoughts and our questions and what we're bringing forward to this. And lastly, I want to say that, you know, we have a great team, and I would venture to say that under other circumstances, perhaps with other people at the helm, this might be a different, in my mind, I'm not sure my ability to wholeheartedly support this, which I do, might be different because it requires, I think as I pointed out at the study session, it does require a leap of faith that the people we have in place, that Dr. Prater and Mr. Mayfield and Ms. Stevens and Don Addis, you know, it's a leap of faith that we're taking, and we're able, I feel that I'm taking, and that I'm able to do this because I know the quality and of people and the devotion and the commitment to making this work, as well as the people we have in Laura Storm and Janet Gould to keep their sites really strong and moving forward and not see this as taking away from them or from what they have to offer. So thinking in those terms and with the people we have in place, I'm able to completely support this. So on that note, I would make a motion with regard to the, this is an action item. I would make a motion to approve the Coastal Bilingual Program.
And I'll second that.
Any further discussion at this time? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you all very much. Motion carries unanimously. All right.
You're up. Good job, Kim.
So let's, if we could, do item 9.02, the approve the LCAP outreach plan for 2019-2020.
Good evening. I'm happy to give you our first update of the year on our local control accountability plan. And this is an interesting year because we will have a similar structure for gathering input. However, as we've been kind of talking about, upcoming, we have a three-year plan, right? So it's a change. So even though the groups will look similar and the structures look similar, we will have a different message, a different type of input that we're looking for people to really think about an opportunity to be creative and look at a new three-year plan. So just a quick reminder, we are required to spend about $4.7 million on our local control accountability plan. It is primarily to meet the needs of three distinct groups: our socioeconomically disadvantaged group, English language learners, and foster homeless youth. So keep that in mind. Although we're required to spend 4.7, because of our commitment to those students, we do spend closer to 7 million. Ms. Dawson, if you don't mind pulling up the graphic, you'll see this graphic here that shows all the different ways that we really do an extensive job, an elaborate job of talking to many different groups and gathering their feedback. I'll tell you a couple of opportunities that have happened so far, even though it's really early in the school year. You'll see that at the top is a great opportunity for us to gather input from our secondary students. And next week, Dr. Prater has the first Superintendent Student Senate where we can begin gathering input from those students. The Common Ground Task Force is the next community opportunity with an intentional wide range of people with varying opinions, and we've had one meeting so far with that. Staff presentations, we've actually started discussing how can we formulate our questions and our survey and our input to staff so that we can really gather really valuable feedback from them. And Mr. Pinkerton and I will begin going around to every single site, giving some information, gathering their input. And then at that point, that's when we give the staff surveys out, and parent surveys then go out at that point as well. Also to call your attention to at the bottom, we typically have 3 to 5 meetings where we will give you updates on where we are with gathering that input. So this is the first one of that. And then parent leader meetings also, I think, Thursday of this week. So these are all starting to roll and coming up. The last thing is that just a couple things to keep in mind is that we also have our local control accountability plan advisory committee, which is a great group representative from every single school is represented in that group. And throughout those meetings that occur occasionally throughout the year, that group looks at every single comment, every single word that is given an input. They gather patterns, look for those kind of patterns that come up, and then we make intentional adjustments to our LCAP based on those. I thought it was me. I'm trying to live in denial about
Rand,
glasses.
Random projector. This didn't happen. Still, so we're working on it. This is brand new. Making it nice. Driving me crazy.
I know I need glasses. Come to grips with it. So I think that's the bulk of the input around where we are with our LCAP for this year. It will be a change, and it will be an opportunity to take new looks and for us to really be visionary. What is best for those three groups? So it's economically disadvantaged, EL, and foster homeless youth. Happy to take any questions.
Is there anyone from the public here to discuss this item? All right, then Ms. Frame, followed by Mr. Buckman.
Kim, thanks for all your hard work. And I'm, looking at this, I was wondering if there is a way to, when we are looking at, I think Dr. Prater has his words that he used of, putting things out there. In some of our groups, we have to kind of pull them through the door.
Is there a way, particularly for our at-risk, parents, the parent community survey, the DLAC, because, the DLAC, are just the representatives, and sometimes they take them back, but they're not, sometimes those ELAC meetings are not as well attended. So, the parent community survey is going to be, put out, and is there a way when we get those surveys back that we can disaggregate so we're looking at the percentage of our at-risk families who are participating, i.e. the ELs or, your Title I's? I mean, I know we can't, I guess we can't look at the, for confidentiality, but we could for, could be for ELs?
We typically ask for those survey results to be anonymous, just because typical survey data, the assumption is that you get pure and massive participation when it is anonymous. So that keeps us from asking for name, demographic information, et cetera, which would have to be self-reported. But we do look at a variety of surveys. So I know sites are really intentional about how do they try to maximize results in those surveys. So they put, for example, they'll wait to do it at a parent teacher conference time. They'll have Chromebooks waiting there as parents wait. I remember last year filling mine out as I waited on my parent teacher conference. They'll have paper surveys available for families that might need that. And it's not the only survey that we use. For example, we used our Brightbite survey. We've used, the parent information survey and other ways that we gather that information. And we sites have really become pretty intentional about how do we ensure that we're gathering input from as high as a percentage as you can possibly get. And there's also some groups, like in the LCAP advisory group, where we ask the sites to be thoughtful and intentional about get parent representatives from one of those three groups, since we're asking the question, what works best for actions and intentions related to those groups. So it's another way that we're trying to be intentional about that.
Okay, so what percentage should we be shooting for, to really get a representative and each site? So, I know it's a burden, on principals, but, that repeated ways of how are we going to up our percentages so that we can get really that representation, because we could see the percentage per site, right, of parents who participate, just overall.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just a way to,
trying to think
competition
if they
between
identify the
sites
site,
about, mm-hmm. trying to get up parent participation. I don't know, just because I don't want to miss anyone. So anyway,
I think you're right on it. With all of our intention is to gather input from as many people as possible and to be really thoughtful about gathering it from these three groups in particular.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you very much. Well, here we go again. I'm really excited that it's going to be a three-year look, so it gives us a chance to maybe incorporate some of the board's priorities and some of the great work that you're doing. I am interested, thank you, Mrs. Frame, for also bringing this up, outreach and the online surveys. And I want to recognize staff's just tremendous work in making the outreach all year to make sure that the families have access, because I know we've discovered in Bright Bites that we thought we had this great access, but the staff has now gone to the point of putting in hotspots in some of the homes to ensure this. So just along those lines. The other thing that came to me as I was thinking about the surveys, and this may be a larger question, is now that we have the bandwidth in people's homes, how do we reach out and ensure that the families have the knowledge they need to use the devices? And so it would take this equity concept up another notch in terms of technology. It's just a thought at this point. I've had over the years, and I want to thank staff again for this, putting the chart in from the National PTA Family and Community Engagement Metric, because it's really interesting to me how
where we stand on this and our own self-evaluation, and we're not very far along, and it's interesting. So each year when we present the LCAP so far, I've sort of been, concerned or willing to point out the fact there's not a great deal of money that's put into this family and community engagement. So we'll see $100,000 here and $100,000 there and then $5,000 for the community. So I'm hoping that we look into this new three-year process and we look at this metric, which is obviously pretty important to us, that we can see maybe a more robust outreach to the community. And also, I think we're making progress. We see it from year to year in our data, and I'm hoping that that is partly being driven by our ability and our desire to go out for family and community engagement. So just throw that out.
Thank you. Anyone else? This is an action item this evening.
Okay. I'd be really happy to move that we accept the item.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Ms. Frame. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. How about, I'd like to propose at this time a 10-minute break. I've been sitting a long time. So it's 8:35 to return. Is that a 9-minute break? Oh, well then go. You get extra 11. My clock still says 11:26. So our next agenda item is 9.03, Board Priority 1, which is the California Assessment of Student Performance and Progress Results, otherwise known as CASP. And
yes. Good evening.
Mr. Mayfield.
So these are our results for our district only at this time. The state has not certified these results. We are allowed to share them with the board, but they're not certified, and we don't have any comparable data from districts around the county and the state yet. That will be coming relatively soon. We got our results this year fairly quickly. The state's been talking about that with the new system for quite some time. Mandy, can you help me out? Thank you. So we're going to look at English, language, arts, and math. Science will be available in January. Thank you. In January coming up in 2020, it's part of, as Mrs. Sheffer pointed out, CASP, the California Assessment for Student Performance and Progress. It's aligned to the California state standards, and it's computer adaptive. Okay, next slide. Thank you. There are four levels, and the language on these levels is straight out of the state of California Department of Education. But we're going to report tonight, when you see the percentages on the slides coming up, that will be students who either met the standard level 3 or exceeded the standard level 4. Next slide, please. Thank you. Nope, the other way. Thank you. Yeah, so level 3 and 4. Okay. So for English language arts, one of the mantras I have for everybody is what we want to see is slow progress over time. We're not looking, and we're not, you really can't achieve 20-point gains. That points to some, anomaly. And so what we want to see is slow growth over time. And that is what we see with our language arts results. We grew only 2 percentage points. The farther we go and the higher our results get, the more difficult it is to make those increases. But we are seeing growth.
Can I ask a question, please?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
So, Rick, with the advance, and I understand what you're saying about it, it's going to be small incremental, how much of it is students adapting to the way the assessments are delivered, computer-based assessments.
I think that happens with standardized tests that students get used to and accustomed to the test. I don't know exactly what year we're in of CASP, you know, maybe four or five. So students do get, you know, better at taking that particular kind of test. What's nice is that this is related to the California state standards. So the instruction in the classroom is more similar to this assessment than the assessments in the past. And as we get better at delivering that instruction, it does reflect from the test. So when the students sit down to take the test, it isn't radically different from what they've gotten on a day-to-day basis. These are our subgroups. On the far left, we have all students. As you can see, our non-SED students highly successful on these tests. Our SED students at 52%. Our EL students at 17%, and I will remind the board that, you know, with the English learner group, once those students are successful on the SBAC assessments, along with other measures, they're redesignated as RFEP or functionally English proficient or fluent English proficient, either one. And then you see that group, the RFEP group, at 67%, and then students with disabilities at 27%. And, you know, this slide illustrates what I talked about earlier, which is, you know, we want to see that slow, steady growth. And what's nice is we see it with, you know, basically all of our groups. You know, the EL group is moving into RFEP, and so you're taking out those successful students every year. So you may not see the same level of growth. I would also note here that the SED made larger growth than either non-SED or the all-student group, which is what we want to see. And if we're going to close the achievement gap, we're going to want to see that, you know, greater growth in that group of students.
Mr. Mayfield, could I ask a quick question? Is there a way, because we've had some success with the RFAP, to disaggregate that by, you know, to really get a true read on what that RFAP looks like by education and SED ethnicity. Just so, I mean, we could just tease that out to just, you know, look at the data more, and then also do that for our SED. And it's not to, you know, point, it's just what actions, looking closer at data, would lead us, you know, when we're revamping, you know, the LCAP.
Sure.
So, I just, could we look, is that?
I would say certainly. I'm certain that we can disaggregate the data like that. What I would tell you is that this is overall data generally that we look at, district-wide data. We group groups together. But what's happening at school sites is an entirely different thing. Some of this data is shared at school sites, but generally not a lot of it in depth for the whole district. School sites generally look at, of course, their own progress over time, and then do drill down and look at, you know, even individual students. So teachers at the beginning of the year, generally in one of those, you know, data days at the beginning of the year, PD days at the beginning of the year, teachers will look at how their students did the previous year and then look at the group they have coming in for this year and how students did on whatever assessment it would be. So if you're K-3, and you're in August looking at data from the previous year, it would be benchmark assessment data, and you'd be looking at BAS and that kind of thing. And if you're 4-6, then you'd be looking at the previous year's SBAC as well as benchmark data. But it's drilling down at those individual students, and then school sites setting goals for those students in terms of, you know, growth. And then they would certainly look at, like, our SED group as a school, and how are we going to make sure that these are the students that are in the interventions that we offer and that type of thing. So this is more of a global view of SBAC data, but that is certainly happening.
Thank you.
Yes. And then in mathematics, you know, again, the slow growth. Of course, the first thing you notice is that the results are less than they are for language arts. That's consistent, I think, across the state of California and with other districts as well. But we're seeing that slow growth over time, which is what we want to see. Broken out by individual groups, the all group on the far left, a non-SED, our SED group, EL. And EL is a little bit higher in math, actually, than language arts, is not being a language-based assessment or as language-based an assessment.
and then the RFEP group there, which is approaching what the all group is, and then students with disabilities did well this year on this particular assessment. Same type of thing here. These are the, love to see that those bar graphs moving over to the right. And for every group over time, including E, although that group has been a little bit more up and down. And then in conclusion, English language arts, slow and steady growth. All groups and all subgroups showing growth. In math, same thing. Achievement gap persists, however. And as you pointed out, Mrs. Frame, we need to be drilling down to individual students and those student groups at sites. And we're certainly doing that and spending quite a bit of time on that to make sure those students are getting the interventions that they need. The SED group showed more growth than the non-SED group, which is how we're going to close the achievement gap. And we hope that that would actually accelerate and that SED group would grow even further. And then our RFEP group is approaching performance of all students in English language arts, but not as much in mathematics.
This is just a discussion item, so at this time, because we don't have a lot of public here, if you have questions, I'd say just ask them as we go, if that's all right with you, Mr. Mayfield.
Oh, I thought we were done. I'm sorry.
So can I ask a question, Ray? Mark, is it? So one of the things I'm wondering about is the math. And I was wondering, Mr. Mayfield, do you think that part of that could be the newer expectations for the SBAC in terms of conceptual underpinnings of math and the ability to use language, for example, to express the answers that you get, actually be they right or be they wrong. Do you think that language ability may be in some ways affecting those scores?
It always does. I think it's inevitable. It's very difficult to get away on any assessment, whether it be science, social studies, math, and just have that assessment be on math. Like, it always has some element of language in it, whether it be reading the instructions or, but certainly the way we instruct now is much more language-based, and students are expressing their ability. And so I think for some students, it would be more challenging in that regard.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. I want to thank you, and I want to thank the whole staff for helping me understand things and talk to me. I guess one of the questions I have is there additional resources or additional things that you need to make that? I understand that it's slow and steady progress, but we have about a third of the students that are still not meeting or exceeding. And are there additional resources that you could see that could be provided that would help?
This will be part of the conversation on restructuring for the LCAP.
Okay.
So we had a meeting today, in fact, to go over kind of, big thinking and big rocks that we're overturning. And I think as this conversation occurs over the course of the year, that's exactly what we're going to be looking at. And a big part of that conversation is the multi-tiered system of support, MTSS, which you'll be hearing more about this year. And looking at our results and saying, what else could we be doing to address these and accelerate the closing of the achievement gap?
Okay. And,
absolutely.
And not to deviate too far, but when you talk about big rocks and you're standing there with, Morrill Rock right behind you, I just... made me smile. If we could go back, sorry. I think it was slide 3, the one with the steps. And I talked with, I communicated with Don today. So when we look at step number 2, it jumped out at me that what the state has put there, and I thought the answer was great that you gave me, that where the kids are, they've already nearly met the standard, but they're not, where we are when we look at, they may require further development for success in future coursework. And I was just so taken aback by the word may. Mm-hmm. It's obviously they need it. So I'm not sure what the state was thinking, but if you could just explain what you explained to me.
So these descriptors come straight from California Department of Education, and the actual descriptor is very long and lengthy, and this is a portion of the descriptor. It does go on to talk about different types of students who might be at a level two. And so, you know, if there was a student who was an English language learner, maybe a level one, and, you know, we wouldn't necessarily expect that that student would be higher than a level two initially on a test. So if a newcomer came in fourth grade and took the mathematics test, for example, and scored a level two, I think that's just the state saying, you know, the student may or may not. I would say that it's certainly, you know, from our point of view, it isn't a question of may.
Okay.
You know, we're looking at students who are at level one and two and talking about how can we move these students forward.
And I was just so glad that it wasn't our wording.
Right.
There's two points on this one. I feel like for me just personally that when we look at the bar charts and it's the standard met and standard exceeded that we look at each time, that we may be missing an opportunity, or I feel like I'm missing an opportunity as a board member to see the improvement that comes within those first two steps. And so at some point, I may come in and talk to you, and I'd hope to see those. I also think we're missing an opportunity to maybe say, we really did really well moving from one to two, and I think that's also going to be to the credit of the staff. Yeah. So
we have that data, and we are having those discussions with sites with individual grade levels, looking at like how many students are at level one and who are those students and how can we move them up to level two and then those to level three, et cetera. And we're looking at that flow over time. So how many students from one year to the next, the same group of, you know, the same cohort, and how do we move students from individual groups up? The old days were where you'd play that game of, okay, I'm going to get these students from who are right on the cusp of three to three, and therefore it'll look like we made tremendous growth. And that's not, you know, of course we're looking at those students, but we're also looking at all of our students and saying, how do we get the ones to two, the twos to three, and the threes to four?
Thank you. This is a discussion item
Correct.
Only. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayfield.
You know,
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Mr. Mayfield, I am always very interested to see the showing that our RFIP students make. Mm-hmm. And I think it probably can be stated that our ELs are often members of our SED population. So those two go hand in glove the majority of the time. So when students reach English proficiency, yet probably remain students in poverty, something is causing them to be highly motivated. And I'm wondering what that is. And I always wonder that. Do you have any ideas about that?
Yeah, it's, you know, if we could solve that issue right there, we could make a movie and, you know, spread the wealth on that. I think those discussions are happening over and over and over again. I will say that in looking at MTSS, you know, the multi-tiered system of support, we're branching out and looking at other districts who are successful. We have a visit next week to a school district in the Valley that has shown positive results for, you know, helping students to close the achievement gap. And we're going to go over there and say, hey, what are you doing? What is it that you have in place, especially in regards to MTSS, that's helping you to close the achievement gap? And you'll see some of those things in our discussion of LCAP as the year progresses, and it will look different than it does now. You know, we have been successful, and I think it's really important to celebrate that success. When we look around to you know, how we do compared to the rest of the county, compared to the state of California, we can be very proud of the work that's been done and the success that our students have. But at the same time, we have to look at those ones and twos and say, not acceptable. And how are we going to, mm-hmm. you know, work to move these students up? So it's something that we talk about daily. You'll see it in the LCAP restructuring as we move forward.
It's just very interesting to me that the acquisition of language is so important for these students, and it helps, and that surmounts poverty.
Mm-hmm. There are families that are so together, but in poverty, and we see those students doing well.
Flourish.
And then families that just are really struggling, you know, if the parents are really struggling, and it might not just be poverty, it could be other factors as well. And you know, school sites can see that this is a family that needs a lot of help, and it impacts the students and their learning for sure. We have a lot in place, and we still have ways to go to really hone in on how to help these kids to be successful.
Thank you.
Thank you for your RFAB question. It is an interesting conundrum. Anything else on this? All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayfield. So our next topic is 9.04, Board Priority 1, Advanced Placement Data.
Yeah. AP data. I do want to start off by saying that today some of this data was changed in the report because we found a discrepancy in the way that it was reported in Illuminate versus the way we access the data from the state site. So apparently when students sign up for the advanced placement test, they don't always put in their student ID number, so the data came up a little different. We did some groundwork and tracking and figured out the discrepancy, and so the numbers were adjusted accordingly. You know, we had the discussion. Mrs. O'Hagan said, you know, can I change it at such a late date? And I said, well, we have to have accurate data in the report that goes up in front of the board. So there was a slight adjustment. It didn't affect it greatly, but there was a slight adjustment of the data today. And that's not something we like to do, but it was important that it be accurate data. Okay, so we're looking at our two comprehensive high schools in terms of advanced placement and what's happening there. Here you can see a list of the courses that are offered at the two different high schools and the enrollment over time. There's lots of different reasons why the numbers are what they are, and it's like every single one of those numbers has a story attached to it. And it's really difficult to look at a chart like that and say, oh, well, this must be happening or that must be happening. And when I put these reports together, and Mrs. O'Hagan helps me greatly with a lot of other departments, we go out and talk to the high schools and say, tell me these stories. What's going on here? We need to look at this. We need to look at that. Here's something to pay attention to. So something like physics, for example, the numbers have fluctuated greatly over 3 years, and I believe that's a staffing issue that Dr. Pruitt pointed out. If you look at calculus numbers, it seems to go down, but students who take BC also get credit for AB if they pass the BC exam. So, you know, they pass the BC exam. They never took AB. They passed the BC exam at a high rate, and there's a subset of those exam results that count for AB. So you could basically combine those two numbers together for enrollment in calculus. If we look at the percentages, enrollment percentages, so at Morro Bay High School, of almost 600 students, about 30% were enrolled in at least one AP course. Non-SED students, about 388 or 30, or of 388, about 36% of those students, et cetera. And you can see down the list. We've been pushing at getting more student inclusion in AP classrooms, especially SED students, RFEB students, EL students. That's an ongoing issue to help kids to feel comfortable to get into those classes and to be successful in those classes. What you can see here is a three-year growth, and you know, the SED, we had a long discussion with Morro Bay High School about the SED results here and exactly what's going on. And Dr. Pruitt expressed his, you know, frustration at seeing those results, wondered what it looked like over a five-year period of time, and said that that was something that they'll be focusing on Morro Bay High School this year to look at how, you know, they can improve those results.
So I have a question for you,
please.
Rick, or actually sort of two questions. Do we know which, looking at that chart, for example, or the one before it, do we know which groups are taking which AP classes? So are our non-SED students taking a different universe of AP classes from our SED students?
Right.
And then the second part of the question is, do we have pass rates for the different groups? So are the non-SED students passing at a higher rate? Are the RFEP students passing at a higher rate than the SED students, for example?
Yeah, I would say it would be similar to the SBAC data. At the site level, those kinds of discussions are going on, and they're looking at, you know, that data and saying, like, how are we going to get more? But I personally have not seen that data collected together in a format like this, no.
Thank you.
And then, you know, at Morro Bay High School, you see the number of, students who have taken exams over the years and the number that have passed. While the number of students that has passed has remained relatively stable, you can see there that the number of exams taken has gone down. There were several factors that Dr. Pruitt pointed out there. The cost of the exams, which is a factor that we're looking into through the foundation. Also, dual enrollment is something that students have figured out, that a lot of universities are not accepting credit for AP, but dual enrollment is basically a two-for-one. And so if they take a dual enrollment course, it will count for college credit. And so, you know, perhaps then they don't take the exam for an AP course. And then San Luis Obispo High School, the numbers is the first thing that just jumps out at you. How many students? It's a different culture in terms of AP and just the volume of students that are taking AP courses at San Luis Obispo High School. Same thing with all the different stories about why one group is bigger one particular year than another. Of the 1,150 students at SLO High, about 44% took an AP course. Of the non-SED students, about half. And of the SED students, just a quarter. And again, ongoing discussion at San Luis Obispo High School, how do we get more students in those courses? You know, how do we make it accessible for our SED families and students?
Rick, I just had a quick question. This sort of relates back to expanded dual immersion and that K through 12 path. Do we have any idea of the numbers of these SLO-High AP students who are either from, you know, who elect to stay in town, but they're really coastal families? You know, they're, you know, either Pacheco or Teach?
We could certainly pull that data.
Okay.
It's not something that we've looked at. And,
okay.
But we could certainly pull it.
Okay.
Does the difference in the two schedules, I'm curious, the block schedule at Morro Bay High School versus the trimester schedule at the high school work to the advantage of, for example, San Luis Obispo High School, which has significantly more, a higher percentage of AP students?
Right. That's a very good question. I defer to our high school experts, Mr. Pinkerton and Mrs. McGrath, on that particular one.
Off the top of my head, don't think it has that drastic of a difference, because you still have to take basically three trimesters at SLO High is the structure they have, because they have the seminar class attached to it. So although a student has 15 choices, it takes three to take the AP. There's a lot more offerings, but, you know, twice the population size, right? So, I think it's a definite cultural change. I think it's the culture around it maybe impacts it more than the schedule.
Dr. Eisenjath Rogers.
Okay. And then this here breaks it out by student group.
Mr. Mayfield,
of course.
Do we have any information about the number of students taking PSAT
the PSAT test?
We had that discussion with the foundation, you know, to say, do we have students? Is this an exam, for example, that we could give to all of our students at the middle school level, eighth grade or ninth grade, in preparation for the SAT test? But I haven't spoken with either one of the principals recently about the PSAT. No.
It appears to me that it's a little known fact that a lot of the scouting that universities do for intellectual talent is based on the PSAT test. Oh. And by the time you get to the SAT test, sort of a given what you're, you know, that has passed and you're no longer eligible for that. But it feels like if we could prep students for PSATs, that could be very beneficial to them, yeah, in terms of getting funding.
That would certainly be a discussion I'd follow up on with them.
Super. Thank you.
Yeah, the other point, if I could just add in, it's a great point, because after PSAT, they also give an AP potential report, which says, hey, kiddo, you did great in these areas, and it shows that you have the potential to register for these kind of AP courses, which is another, you know, for a lot of kids that question themselves or they don't picture themselves in an AP class or that kind of thing, it's a neat way to have even another voice saying, no, you're showing the potential to do this.
Sometimes that's all it takes, is for someone to believe in you and to see your potential. Thank you.
Exactly. Yeah, some of the great points that middle school brought up was, you know, we could call these courses pre-AP, yeah, you know, English and pre, you know, algebra, pre-AP algebra, and, you know, getting kids early on thinking that, hey, this is preparing you for those courses later on. And then by subgroup, you know, over 3 years, you know, as you see, the non-SED group has remained level for all students, even though there was a spike last year and has gone down. Over 3 years, there is growth. Same for SED and RFEB students as well.
Mr. Buckman?
I was going to wait till you're done, but if when I look at the students enrolled in AP classes, mm-hmm, so if you go to at Morrill Bay High, I noted that there were 209 students, and when I went to San Luis High, there were 303 students. So then the next slide back, further, there. So SED, and it says
388, non-SED. SED is 209.
Right, and if you now go forward to San Luis High, it's 303. That seems so. My gut feeling is it's like there's more. That's pretty even between the two, mm-hmm, high schools.
Even though there's a big difference in overall enrollment.
Big difference in, yep, percentage. Okay. Yep. I just want to make sure the numbers were right.
Yeah. Very good point.
Okay. Thanks.
You bet. So this would be over a 3-year period of time, number of students enrolled. Enrollments in AP courses there seemed to spike last year. Number of exams taken has actually increased. And then number of exams passed as well. And then in conclusion, you know, overall numbers have remained consistent at Morrill Bay. Non-SED shows an increase, but SED and RFEP declined. And that's an ongoing conversation we're having with Morrill Bay as to how to address that. At SLO High School, numbers relatively consistent over the years, and RFEP students show a small increase. Both schools continue to develop strategies on how to help students be successful and enroll in AP. Dual enrollment is having an impact on AP enrollment, and we'll have to explore that over time. And then we are addressing the costs associated with the exams through the foundation and other sources as well.
Any other board comments or questions? Thank you, Mr. Mayfield.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. I see that tonight we just have one new board, first reading of a board policy. Ms. McGrath?
Yes, one tonight. So tonight we have a first reading on board policy
0540. I'll bring your attention to a couple of components, if you don't mind displaying that for us. At the top, your subcommittee just noticed that it was kind of an incomplete sentence, a thought missing there, so we added the word learning environment. And then you'll see, after all the references there, each principal or designee shall ensure the development of a site-level safety plan, another seemed to be kind of missing component. The bulk component there you see in red is a gamut suggestion that that we feel is good practice. If you look at the bottom sentence in that first paragraph, in developing these strategies that involved certain circumstances, district administrations shall consult with law enforcement officials. That's the substantive part of that. And we have, in Mr. Pinkerton's good work around school safety, created even tighter relationships with law enforcement, including sheriffs, police, with our SROs, with your addition to that. So you can see that addition there. I'll bring your attention to the next paragraph where it says that the board may meet in closed session to confer with law enforcement officials on certain topics where there may be some briefing that needs to happen that may not need to be related to, you know, in public open information. So tonight is the first reading. This has gone through your typical progress of directors looking at that, it going through your subcommittee, coming here for your first reading. Typically, we would bring this back for a second reading. So that's what I would assume or propose tonight.
Any questions from the board before bringing this back for a second reading? All right, thank you. We'll look forward to seeing this on the our next consent agenda. Okay. So now we're going through the consent agenda. Please let me know if there's anything you'd like pulled. 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 10.03, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. I'm pulling 10.04, ratify board direction to superintendent regarding letter to San Luis Obispo City Council. 10.05, proposed revisions to board policy 4113, assignment. 10.06, proposed revisions to board policy 4136/4236/4336, non-school employment. 10.07, proposed revisions to board policy 5125.1, release of directory information.
Move approval of items 10.01 through 10.03 and 10.05 to 10.07.
Second. Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, 10.04, Mrs. Roger, I believe you have a yellow sheet.
I have a request to speak from Marika Van Buren.
Hello, yes, I am again speaking on behalf of Mayor Heidi Harmon. She wants to thank Dr. Prater for bringing this issue to the board, and she just wants to say that she is 100% in support of banning all vapes of all types, especially the flavored ones, because they tend to target our most vulnerable population, our children. She wants to let you guys know that all the mayors in the county recently spoke about it and are interested in moving forward potentially with a ban. And they're also waiting to see what state legislation comes down around this issue, as this, as you know, the state is also looking at a statewide ban. So thank you.
Thank you. I also wanted to pull this issue, this item, because of a question I had about the reason that it is appearing under the action consent agenda tonight as ratification is not because of the topic, but because of the process. And at our last regular meeting, when we discussed this, it was brought forward as an action item, which and I allowed it to go forward and should not have. And it was a violation of the Brown Act because we are not allowed to take action on something that has not been on an agenda. We can request that an item be placed on a future agenda. We can ask questions, request information. But this was actually an action item that we did not go through the process of having public input on. I kind of struggled with it and didn't feel confident enough in my position, in my knowledge of the Brown Act, to fully indicate that at the meeting. Really bothered me. So I spoke with Dr. Prater the next day and said, I think that I violated the Brown Act. And so I learned through our counsel that the way to cure the violation was to place it here and ratify a decision that had been made. So I want to make clear that I support what we're doing, but the process was incorrect. So this is an opportunity here to correct an error that I made. So that is why that's on here. So having said that, I would hope that we will now ratify the prior board direction to the superintendent regarding that letter. Motion? I'm making that motion.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Motion by me, second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Next is anything on for the advance agenda, Mr. Unger?
Yeah, this is in response to the public comment that we heard. I'm interested in knowing more about the protections that we have for our students regarding internet access and the policies that we have for our younger and our older students' access. I know that we do use ST Math, for example. I know that we have a phenomenal IT staff, and I know that internet protection is required by federal law. But I also know that it's a moving target, and so I would like to ask the board to support me on receiving more information on this. I don't know if this is a kind of a thing where we would want to have a study session or whatever, but I'm looking for support for more information on this particular item.
So are you requesting that it be on an agenda or Friday notes, or how would you like to
I don't know if we could have this on an agenda. I know we've got some pretty tight things coming up, but this is almost to me a study session. I really would like to know more about this, and I'd like to know what, just even to reassure the parents that we consider this a really critically important topic and that we understand it ourselves. Maybe Jeremy can come and explain this stuff to us. So I'm in my head, I'm thinking study session or agenda item, but it's up to the board.
Well, it looks like we have some more, Mr. Millar, than Mr. Buckman.
I think I just kind of think it's a leap when it's a complaint about one site and apparently one incident. I would prefer that staff, I don't know if this has been followed up on at the site, but I don't know that it rises to the level where we need a study session for it.
Mr. Buckland?
Yeah, I would wholeheartedly support this. I think that we're spending a lot of time on safety and, you know, active shooter drills, and we've got kids that we need to work with on the internet and their skills, and I'd be interested to know just from a broader, maybe even a broader picture than just did somebody get onto a bad website. You know, how we're dealing with the kids and the internet. I'm fully supporting this.
So then we need to, it looks like we have two people in support of it. I personally would not prefer a study session on it. I think this is something that could be handled by a presentation at a board meeting rather than, I know that we've got study sessions planned out. If we we even have agendas planned out, so I don't know. My understanding is this would be out in the future at some point. This is not going to be something immediate. But Dr. Prater, what's your sense of our future agendas?
Yeah, so we could talk certainly talk more about this in clerk, but the October 1st board meeting is looking particularly full. The October 15th, less so. So if we were to agendize this for discussion, I know Jeremy would love to come and talk to the board about what he does and what the IT department does. This is complex. There's a lot in it, and it's something that he would enlighten all of us on. And I could see the October, if that's what the board wishes to do, the October 15th board meeting, or even the November 5th board meeting, would be plausible for that agenda, if that's what you wanted to do.
So, Ms. Frayne, then Mr. Buckman, and then just to kind of close the loop on this, what we'll need to do is, you know, have this discussion tonight and then bring it back to our next meeting to determine that this is what we want to do. We won't make a final decision tonight, and then at that point, Dr. Prater can present a more definitive timeline. So, Ms. Frayne, then Mr. Buckman.
I was just going to support, you know, Chris and yourself talking about, you know, presentation right now would be kind of sufficient. Everybody, it's an important topic, but, you know, getting everybody, including myself, up to speed on, you know, what it looks like, and then if it warrants later on something, but presentation would be certainly sufficient. Thanks.
Mr. Buckman.
So this is what I'm hearing is tonight what we're talking about, and I think what we can talk about is, do we want to bring it forward or do we not, as opposed to specifics that might be discussed? Because I'm sort of leaning towards specifics right now, as to items that would be within that item.
Well, my understanding is that tonight we determine if there is a desire to have the topic brought forward.
Okay, and
then it will be brought back at our next meeting with a timeline attached to it. If there is determination among the board that we want that looked into.
Thanks for confirming what I'm feeling. So, great. Thanks.
So to understand this, next board meeting, I'll bring back a recommendation of how we're going to proceed with that particular request.
And let you guys
weigh in on it.
It's not our process.
Am I hearing that right?
Yes.
And that's something you guys at
clerk. Yeah, when we'll talk at clerk about the when it might fit in and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Anything else at this time? Board reports. God, Marilyn, you were on it tonight more than I am. For some reason, I can't see these lights very well. Board reports. Dr. Eisenjath Rogers.
I would just like to thank Mr. Calandro for sponsoring the film Like to be shown at Laguna Middle School. It was well attended, and it was fascinating. It's a documentary about the impact of social media on our lives and the effects of technology on our brains. And Like comes from how people kind of become addicted to, on Facebook, for example, getting that like and what it takes to get that like and what happens when you don't get that like. So that was, I thought it was subtle, but subtly effective. And I appreciate that he hosted that and had a panel afterwards that discussed sort of the fragility of not just teenagers, but all of us in terms of our self-awareness. So I thought that was well done. I want to thank him for that.
Thank you. Mr. Unger, then Mr. Buckman.
Well, and I just want to say that I too attended that, as did Mark and Evelyn. And I wasn't sure if anybody else was there. It was quite an interesting video, and I really appreciated that. Both Mrs. Frame and I attended the community visit to Pacheco. And I thought what was interesting to me was the number of young families that attended. There were about 15 maybe 10 to 15 family people that came.
People and then about
6 families or 7
Yeah. Businesses. It was mostly young people with young children who seemed to be interested in the program and were using it as a way to check it out. And then again, I really want to thank Del Mar for hosting me. I came over and spent some time here. As always, I love coming here, and just a big shout out to Mrs. Gould and the staff.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. I attended the film. I thought it was great. It was a little made me do a little self-reflection. And I also want to just note that I appreciate the school sponsoring it, but I just got to get the plug in because it was PTA that paid for the whole deal, and I thought that was great as well.
Okay, and we have a study session on October 10th, and it's my understanding, because we have had some confusion over advanced agenda, that will be a topic that we'll be discussing at our study session to make sure we have a clear protocol established that the entire board agrees on. Anything further? Then we are adjourned.
Thank you. I'm assuming it's 10 minutes.